Before we get to the season finale of the Survivor Feedback Show with Mike Bloom, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this podcast. Those are friends over at Bear Mattress. And a Bear Mattress is designed especially for your active lifestyle or mine. Whether you're a professional athlete, a weekend warrior, or just on your feet all day, you will sleep better and perform at your best because Bear was built for optimal cooling, comfort, and muscle recovery. Go to bearmattress.com. That's B-E-A-R mattress.com. And for a limited time, use the offer code POD100 to get $100 off your new mattress. You saw the survivors this week. They're tired. That won't be you with a Bear mattress because they use eco-friendly materials developed with insights from sleep experts, professional athletes, and engineers to create a super comfortable, supportive sleep that's 7 times cooler than traditional foam mattresses. Bear mattress uses scientifically proven technology called Sealient to help relieve tired muscles, improve sleep quality, and boost athletic performance. You can try a Bear mattress for 100 nights in your home with a 100% money-back guarantee. They'll ship it right to your door, and it's made in the USA from eco-friendly materials. Bear mattresses have over 5,000 five-star reviews, so get $100 off. It's a great deal. Mattresses can be expensive. Bear mattresses start at just $540, so get $100 off with our coupon code POD100 for $100 off any size mattress for a limited time only. That's at bearmattress.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here is the remora fish of Survivor Rob's, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am very excited here on the season finale of the Survivor Feedback Show because I am always thrilled when I get a chance to talk to this person anytime. And it looks like, based on my calendar, that we should be talking a lot this summer. Here is the great host of so many different podcasts, including the co-host of the RHAP B&B and RuPaul's Drag Race, and then like a million other shows. Please welcome back the great Mike Bloom.
I, on the other hand, was a man whore.
Yes.
I thought I was going to drop into some sort of big theme song or something where like a dubstep remix of the man whore soundbite. But I'm happy that it's just in a small, small morsel to chew on.
Just a podcasting man whore these days.
Yes, exactly. A pod whore, if you will. I'm happy to be the Survivor podcaster ambassador of goodwill here. I brought a volleyball
that finished in
third place on Big Brother Canada, and a basketball. They're near mint condition because I have not used any of them in my lifetime. So happy to impart them upon the Survivor community.
Yes. Well, Mike, I have been looking forward to this episode all season long, and it's always a treat to get to talk to you about just about anything. Very excited to be seeing you in person this week, as you are going to, according to the word on the street, attend your very first Survivor finale.
Yes, the talk of the town is I will be making my way out of this rainy, cold Manhattan and hopefully flying into sunnier weather and sunnier dispositions into California. I mean, yeah, I've never been in the Survivor community since the Survivor finales were in New York. I was but like a zygote in the Survivor fan community back then. But now, you know, since I covered the show, I've been doing a lot of exit press, which I've been very grateful for. It's my second season doing so. I decided to sort of, my gut was telling me, make the flight over and attend the finale, and so I'll be excited to not only be in the room where it happens, but also get to join you and Josh on the red carpet to talk to some people about what exactly is going through their heads over these 3 hours of shenanigans that should ensue next week.
Okay, so lots of fun to ensue coming up for the finale, but we still have a lot of work to discuss. Of course, Mike, you and Liana Boris on the RHAP B&B have been covering the season so well already, and I'm just very thrilled to have you back here with me. You guys are doing a great job on the B&B. Really enjoyed last week's episode with Meg Z, maybe one of my favorite guests.
Thank you. Yeah, Meg Z is fantastic. She's totally willing to sit sidecar with us as we drive that motorcycle through whatever territory. It's so funny that you're like, you're covering the season so well. Because, I mean, if you're counting, you know, trolling Libby's Instagram and giving Shark Tank pitches for contestants, I think we've got that market covered pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mike, you and I have been podcasting together for so long now. I don't even know how many years it's been, but we have been podcasting together for so many years. We were podcasting about Roseanne Barr when she wasn't even on a hit TV show.
I know. If only you had done a Roseanne post-show recap, because you really had nailed that impression down as it slowly morphed into your Norm MacDonald impression the next year, from what I recall.
Yes. Mike, I believe that the first podcast that we did together was Last Comic Standing, and there was a JB Smoove edition, and then there was one where Roseanne was one of the three hosts on it, and now there is no more Last Comic Standing at this point.
At this point, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we've covered some very, I don't know, prescient shows. I mean, we covered the last season, you and I, of Trump's version of Celebrity Apprentice. We covered Roseanne before her big break back into prime time. I can only imagine now, looking back, what sort of, like, much like Ghost Island, these relics of podcasts have been germinating for years, and they're going to blossom into some rather strange pieces of pop culture and news items.
Well, really, the whole state of TV, and I tweeted about this the other day when there was a commercial for Murphy Brown during Survivor, is that really Ghost Island may have started a trend here where things don't really ever go away. The stick is not over. It's on hiatus, just waiting for a reboot on Ghost Island. And so I think in that way, where Will and Grace, Roseanne, Murphy Brown, Full House, you name it, they are not gone. They are just maturing on Ghost Island, waiting to get brought back with even different powers.
Now, I would say that on the other hand, you have Brooklyn Nine-Nine is Kellen's extra vote.
Yes.
Where it got used incorrectly, but now it's back in someone else's hands, and we'll see if they can reverse the ratings curse.
Yes. Also, the same for Primetime Nine-Nine. That is also waiting on Ghost Island, waiting to be brought back in another vehicle.
I mean, he's gone through a lot of vehicles at this point, like a teenager crashing so many of their parents' cars.
But so he sells we'll see used if we can cars also.
Yeah, I mean, among other things. So we'll see if we can loan one out to him to see if he can keep it stable on the road of reality television.
Okay, and we'll all be waiting for the return of Utopia and Whodunit to come back from Ghost Island. But Mike, let's talk about Ghost Island itself and so many different things to get into as we start to look ahead to the finale. Do you have, as a Survivor historian, part of the illustrious Survivor Historians podcast as well, Mike, do you have any thoughts on Survivor 36 as a whole at this point?
Yeah, so I, like a lot of people, really loved that pre-merge. I feel like we were getting character stuff. We were getting some strategic stuff. You know, despite the Navidi strong being pumped into us, there was a lot of other extraneous things going on that sort of defied that. I feel like everyone, sans maybe someone like Chelsea, got some sort of moment out there in those first seven episodes. And it culminates in, not to spoil part two of our 20-part upcoming podcast series, but maybe one of the greatest merge episodes of all time. I don't know what it is. I'm still trying to put my finger on it, but something isn't necessarily clicking with me in this post-merge so far. And I guess I can
click, 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 click.
Yes.
Nice.
To quote the Spradlin family babysitter of choice, yes. So it's just, I don't know if it's, because I really enjoy the cast. I don't know if it's the action that's going on. I don't know if it's the story we're being told. I feel like there might be something where, and you and I think talked about this during Cambodia, this idea of sort of a short-term edit versus a long-term edit, where you watch an episode in isolation and you're like, okay, that's a good episode. And then you think about sort of stringing a bunch of episodes together and you wonder, okay, what's sort of our long-term through line here with each and every person? I don't know if that's exactly prevalent on Ghost Island. I would still say that there were watchable episodes in this post-merge, but when I look back upon them, and maybe that's sort of contributing to my odd feelings towards the latter half of this season, there's not much to string through there, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the pre-merge of this season was really fantastic. Basically, the first 7 or 8 hours of the show ultimately culminating in the Chris Noble boot episode. But I just feel like that Navidi and more specifically Dominic and Wendell have just had so much control since that point that there really haven't been, you know, some there's been like little flare ups here and there and little like insurrections that they've had to put down. But overall, it's just been very static in terms of where we go from here. And we haven't had a lot of insanity also breaking out on the island, maybe little tiny things like Angela in the gross food challenge. And, you know, we've had moments here and there, Aunt Patty. But overall, it's just been, you know, just pretty much cut and dry for the last 6 or 7 episodes. And, you know, there are seasons like that that have sort of a exciting pre-merge and then sort of a pretty straightforward second half of the season. You have older seasons. I think Australia is very much like that, that has like a really great pre-merge. And then it's very much a straight shot for Keith and for Colby and for Tina to ultimately get to the end. And I guess the intrigue comes from, oh, is it going to be like, who's Colby going to go to the end with? Is it going to be Keith or is it going to be Tina? And so maybe, and without a final two, we kind of are robbed of that drama a little bit with Dominic and Wendell. But also, I think a season like a Redemption Island as well, where you have a lot of fireworks going on between Rob and Russell in the pre-merge, and then it's pretty much a straight shot in the post-merge. So I think that we're probably going to look back at it in those terms, in terms of just as a season, but based on the winner, we may have a little bit of a halo effect on the season where we're talking about these two really great players at the top of a top heavy season.
Yeah, I mean, there's this weird sort of inverse effect in Survivor where there's an inverse relationship many, many times between the effectiveness of a move strategically and the entertainment factor of the move. You know, that's, to your point, sort of where your Boston Robs and Redemption Islands or the aforementioned Kim Spradlin sort of lie there, where they were making moves that are fantastic for their game, but they're very straightforward, and straightforward does not necessarily play well on our screens when we are looking for entertainment and surprise reactions and big, quote-unquote, big moves and all that jazz. Now, of course, you have exceptions. I feel like Tony Vlachos, as per always, is a blip off that radar somewhere in Llama Llama Land. But I feel like part of the contributions, you know, to the thoughts on this season is the fact that because they are doing things so well, it's not exactly coming off as entertaining. And I can also understand that, you know, people's frustrations come from what we're being shown on this quote-unquote other side, which is sort of funneled through Laurel's narrations, which I'm sure we're going to get to, these Hamlet-esque soliloquies or Shaquillas about, you know, should I stab them in the back? I don't want to, they're my friends, but if I do, that's how I get to the end. And ultimately, we end up in an action. It almost feels like, you know, you mentioned sitcoms before. Sometimes these Ghost Island episodes feel like a sitcom episode where conflict arises, but then everything resets back to the status quo at the end of the day,
minutes.
And then we move forward again.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Jeff Franklin's name shows up in the credits, and then we're done.
Mike, let me then segue off of that into our first voicemail of the show. And this comes from Graham from the Bay. And Graham watched the know-it-alls, and he felt like that one know-it-all really had it right this week, and one know-it-all really did not know it all. Here is Graham from the Bay.
Hey, Rob and Mike. Bloom! It's Graham from the Bay. Mike, hang tight. I want to talk to Rob, because call it blasphemy, but Fishback is right. I honestly don't understand how you can defend Laurel here. I will say, she's been rational. She's been good at challenges. And I also see her and Donathan as another marriage of convenience. And I think being the alpha and also prior to this tribal council, she's done a good job of keeping him close to her when he's been wanting to defect. That being said, she made the wrong move. The only thing that comes to mind to me from a past season that's similar to this is Andrea in Redemption Island. The difference, though, is that where Andrea comes back from Redemption Island, wants to make a move against Rob, but his minions choose not to do anything. Here, other players are coming to her and Donathan wanting to make a move. She herself recognizes it would be a good idea and then chooses not to pull the trigger. And going back to the marriage of convenience thing, even though she has done a good job of keeping Donathan close, she's been a bad leader and leading him in a direction that's bad for her game. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at this as how do I win, and she's looking at this as how do I get to the final three. But I just feel like if you're playing to win and you yourself recognize the move should be to take out Wendell, you take out Wendell. Those are my thoughts. What I want to know is after your Wednesday night quarterback session, do you still feel the same way about Laurel as you did on Know-It-Alls? Love to get your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Graham, I appreciate the question, and I would love to get into that a little bit. Mike, I don't know if you've weighed in on the debate at all. Did you have any thoughts that you want to talk about Laurel's lack of a move this week?
Yeah, it's tough because, again, I feel like our perceptions are a bit skewed because I do agree with your point that this was not a situation where it was three people on one side, three people on the other side, and one person in the middle, and they decided not to flip over. You know, Seabass, he's taken that remora strategy. He's clinging onto the underbelly of the great whites that are Dominic and Wendell. Angela, we are not entirely sure what's going on with her at this point. I mean, she sort of has this history of like, if I'm with you, I'm with you. So maybe she felt really close to Dom and Wendell that she's going to stick by them no matter what. So the fact that she is the one that's getting all these confessionals, and it's sort of, unfortunately, a double-edged sword of her being such a good confessional giver, where she does sound very natural and well-spoken, as you said, where she's the one that's giving off all these sound bites of weighing the pros and cons of things. Whereas we have three people that are doing it, but she's the one getting the lion's share of the time. I feel like that's the major reason why there is so much flack against her. And it does disappoint me. You know, I love this community, but it does get to some points where people get so intensely emotionally active about this show that they go after people on social media. I don't mean go after them like you made the wrong move. Go after them like make very deep personal cuts and attacks, which I feel like no matter how you feel about a Survivor contestant always crosses the line, considering that they are people at the end of the day. But, yeah, I mean, it would have been tough for her to make this move now. If anything, this is maybe sort of us unleashing frustration upon her for a move that she should have made last week. Mm-hmm. Because that's when things seem more lined up. Kellen had those numbers together, and it seemed like Laurel blew that opportunity now. It's just the show kept bringing up these sound bites, especially in full force this week, when she outright says he's really, you know, I'm gonna almost say like under the bus like confessionals, where she's saying, well, they're my friends, so I don't want to betray them, or I don't want to vote off Wendell because, you know, he nearly won immunity and I wouldn't want to vote him out with that sour taste in his mouth. Like, I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt and say I don't think she really believes that, but because the show wants us to make her think she believes that, that might be leading to a lot of the resentment against her. So I guess to sort of sum things up, I agree with what you're saying about the fact that, you know, she is not the only player in this show that we should be throwing tomatoes at. But at the same time, because she is getting such a focus on it, and because she should have been making this move in the past, she still shouldn't escape the blame.
Right. So I want to weigh in on this, and I've watched the episode now three times, and I get where the frustration is coming from for Laurel, as you articulated, that she's done such a great job in the confessional, basically laying out the scenario, which I think points to that she has a pretty good understanding of everything that's going on. I love the author Chuck Klosterman, and he wrote a book called I Wear the Black Hat. And it's all about villains. It's his definition of a villain is someone who knows the most but cares the least. Whereas if this is Seabass, nobody's mad at Seabass or Angela because it's like, oh, what do they even know? Obviously they don't have a finger on the pulse. But we see Laurel in confessional and she talks about, yeah, if I go with those guys, I want to slit their throat, but I can't beat them. And so what do I do? And then she doesn't make a move. And that's why I get it. Why people are upset about this. Stephen Fishback said about her, I hold her to a higher standard because I know she knows knows what to do. And all of the Brent Wolgamots of the world, of everybody who is very
there's only
upset.
One Brent Wolgamot in the world. Let's be honest
yes.
here.
Okay. Fair enough. So I I've also taken criticism because why haven't I come down harder on Laurel? I've heard, oh, why? Because she's a patron that you just have to defend every move that she makes. No, that's not the case. Although I will admit, because it's somebody that I, you know, have some awareness of outside of the game of Survivor, I do probably spend more time trying to understand their actions more so than somebody who is basically a two-dimensional character on the show. You know, I'll own that. But let me just go back to how I look at this scenario, because I really do believe if there was a move for Laurel to make, she would have made it. She's telling us in the confessional, I know I can't beat them. I know I need to flip, but I don't think that she thinks that that move is available. And I think that there's a number of reasons for that. So the show all season long is showing us about how Dominic and Wendell are the threats. And now Laurel and Donathan are aligned with them. And that's a really bad spot for them. But also, we have to remember that the players out there also look at Kellen as perhaps an even greater threat than Dominic and Wendell. And I know that that seems crazy because there's Dominic and Wendell, but the players out there talk about Kellen and how, oh, if Kellen gets to the end, she's going to win. Even Desiree, who was in an alliance with Kellen, had to rise up and say, I got to make a move on Kellen, not even on Dominic and Wendell. You've seen people like, Michael was focused on getting out Wendell, but other players are focused on they have to get out Kellen because she's going to win the game if we don't stop her. So the only moves that are out there for Laurel to make are some version of flipping and going off with Kellen, but Laurel and Kellen don't have a really strong relationship. They voted against each other a couple of rounds ago, and I think that Laurel is looking at it, well, I could either go to the end with these two guys, maybe they're going to turn on each other at some point, or I can flip to go and vote with Kellen, but she doesn't have any sort of assurances from Kellen, whereas at least the guys are saying, we're going to take you to the final three. She's not getting any sort of assurance like that. And the other side of this is that the underreported story of that Dominic and Wendell have done such a good job with Seabass. I believe that Dominic and Wendell really want to go to the final three with Laurel, but they're also telling Seabass he's going to the final three. And Seabass is the one who I believe is mistakenly believing he's going to the final three with Dominic and Wendell. So he's not really incentivized to flip against those guys because he's thinking that he's the person who's in that third seat with them. And he may be delusional enough to think, oh, I can beat those guys. Everybody loves me. I've got all these different people like Jenna and Libby and Chris Noble. And he might be counting the votes in his head and feeling like, hey, if these guys split a couple of votes, I've got four or five votes. Maybe Angela, maybe Kellen. And so Seabass may be the one who might be mistakenly thinking, if I get to the end with those two guys, I'm going to win. So he's not really incentivized to flip against Dominic and Wendell. So you can't really include Seabass on the plan. And so now Laurel would have to, if she was going to make a move in this round, vote with Angela, Kellen, Donathan, and herself to get four votes on either Dominic or Wendell. But Kellen said in her exit interview that Angela wasn't even going to vote. Like, Angela had already flipped against Kellen, and I'm not sure if that's because she is sort of like at the hip with Seabass or if Dominic and Wendell are also telling her. We have no idea. We're sort of blind to what Angela is thinking. But even if Laurel went ahead and voted with Donathan and Kellen and Angela on this vote, well, now either Dominic or Wendell is gone. Let's say Wendell, there's still the possibility that Dominic is able to reunite Navidi Strong, where he might be able to go back and flip it around. They might be able to get Dominic out. Now, he has an idol still at this next round of play. And even if they got him out, it's probably more likely that Kellen wants to go to the final three with Seabass and Angela, as opposed to go to the final three with Donathan and Laurel. So there's still a chance that the remaining Navidi players could still pick off Laurel and Donathan. So it's not one of these situations that I talk about where open one door, you win the game, open one door, you lose the game. Her and Donathan are just in this really bad spot being the only two Malolo people, and everybody else has this background of being Navidi strong and working together in the beginning of the game and then also in this post-merge where Navidi was so tight. So if there was a flip available to her, I think that she would take it, but she is just in this really bad situation where I don't think that she can win the game no matter what she does. I'm not really sure. I don't see the opening for her.
I think there's at this point she might be drawing dead. I feel like there's a very, very small pinhole that she can possibly stretch herself into where if she's somehow able to get out one of them at either 6 or 5 and then win final immunity, bring someone along and have the other one fall at fire. Now that is probably the least case scenario or worst case, least likely scenario to happen in this finale whatsoever, considering the edits that we've been given and what we've been shown, but that's a small possibility. I want to go back to a couple things that you mentioned there. First, maybe this is me being the aforementioned Seabass stan that I am. I take some umbrage with you saying that he, you know, mistakenly believes that he could win in the final three. I feel like if we have Dominic and Wendell in the final three, I feel like Seabass is the worst person to bring.
He'd get a few votes. He'd get a few votes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think the other three would, because, you know, from what I've been speaking about in my exit press as well, people freaking love that guy. And it's been talked about so much, especially, you know, most recently on these Big Brother shows when you have these surprising jury votes, that a lot of times jurors pride more intrapersonal relationships. The 24 hours you spend on a person with an island becomes so important in this game from what we see on screen that I have heard nary a bad word about Sebastian. Bradley talked about bonding over freshwater fish tanks. Kellen just talked to me about her little bit of Survivor Sunshine where he called her a free bird. And I don't know, maybe he was just referring to his favorite concert song, but that really like tickled her when she got home. So I think that, you know, I agree that he's being strung along. As he says on Ghost Island, he is riding the boy train. Make whatever of you want with that, Tobias Funke. But I'll sort of tangentialize that into another question. Do you think taking Kellen out was a good move for Dominic and Wendell? In this day and age where we're priding this meat shield strategy, and admittedly, like you said, Kellen was such a big target, now with her gone, do you think there's a greater chance that now the other four might start turning and saying, well, who's the next biggest threat left? Hey, look at these two guys in the corner.
I don't think so. I think it was the right move for them to take Kellen out because she was probably the person that was more of the ringleader and the person who would be able to get everybody on the same page, whereas Dominic and Wendell can really play Laurel against Seabass if they want to, because they both are fighting for that spot next to them, because Dominic and Wendell and Laurel might be hoping that maybe they're going to turn against each other at some point down the road. I mean, we're still only at the final six, and there is that possibility that one could get greedy and want to take out the other and then make up some other final three, which might include Laurel and Donathan in it. So I don't see Donathan, Laurel, Angela, and Seabass getting on the same page against Dominic and Wendell, especially when they have those loaded pockets, as Donathan has said.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, you know, we still have time, it's at the final six, because I feel like with this sort of hurry-up offense, if I'm using a football term correctly, that I pulled out of my own butt there, that we sort of play out with these 20-person seasons, I wonder if we have enough time.
You're right.
To pull out something like that. I feel like in the past 20-person season where we've had these sort of, like, rushed, and even in you know, Game Changers and Millennials versus Gen X, we went from 8 to 3 day after day after day. I feel like you need to sort of be preparatory and say, almost put yourself in autopilot, you know, send up your out-of-office message to just sort of put yourself up there, schedule your later grams so that no matter what the situation comes about, you say, okay, it's this, 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 and this, and then we're in the final three. So I don't know, and hopefully I'm not jinxing this finale, since again, it'll be the first one I'll be at, and I want it to be exciting for both myself and the viewers. I'm hopeful that there will be some exciting stuff happening, but part of me wonders that, you know, they have their ducks set up in a row so that if there are certain outcomes that happen, there was all this talk about plan A, B, and C. They have all those set up because usually on Survivor, you have nothing but time out there on the island, but it's very, very limited in those final few days. Very few time to be able to make a huge turnaround.
I would reject that, though, Mike. I think that with there being, you know, a day for each tribal council, this isn't like a Big Brother triple eviction or anything like that, where you have a day. How much conversation do you need to have? People win immunity all the time. And so I think that there would be time. I think Big Brother is probably a more of an example where you kind of like need a week to campaign and get off the block, where I think it might be difficult to really change people's perception of you in that short amount of time, but you might be able to convince somebody to vote with you on the short term, especially with the finish line being so close. Like, can't you see? You'll be in the end if you vote with me on this vote. Like, oh, but that person's my friend, but you'll be at the end. Okay, fine, I'll do it. I think that that type of maneuvering does happen, I think, in the end game. And it did happen in Millennials versus Gen X.
Here's another random question, because I was thinking just about like the decision specifically. I know we're focusing on Laurel, but I want to think about the decision that Dominic and Wendell made to go after Kellen. I wonder if there's something to keeping around Donathan, who is so staunchly anti-Wendick there, just because... I don't know. I mean, I wonder if there's something going on in their heads of like, if I send Donathan to the jury, he is going to assumingly be fiercely talking against us. The fewer hours that I give him to spend on the jury and possibly change their minds one way or the other, the better chance that I have. Now, I don't know if that means taking him to the final three, because then you get set up in that scenario that you mentioned before that's happened a few times where it's a pair and then you have the outside, the vocal outsider.
Right, he's Sandra now.
Yeah, he's Sandra, and so then they might give him the money, but I wonder if doing something like...
I tried to tell you guys that these guys, they were running, they had all these things in their backpack, and nobody believed me. And it's like, oh boy, Donathan's making a lot of sense.
Exactly, like, no, now he made his way to the final three. You know, he argued against them, but still convinced them to take him to the end. So I wonder if, like, the ideal scenario for them would be letting him... go to fire making, presumably lose, and then he only has what, like maybe a day with the jurors before coming back and then moving forward there, sort of like mitigating the possible damage that can happen against your reputation in Ponderosa.
I like that. I think that's a pretty good, and I don't know about Donathan's fire making skills, but I suspect that if we were having a draft of who's going to make the fire first, I think that he would probably go low in that draft.
Yeah, he can spit fire, yes. But I don't know if he can make it.
Yeah. So just to go back to the Laurel thing, I don't know if was a good move for her. Sure, would it have been a lot more fun to watch her take a big swing? Yes. But in terms of would I have done that? I don't know. I mean, I made a move at the final seven where I went with the other people, as opposed to I was in a four-person alliance with Alex and Heidi and Jenna. And I made a flip at seven, but I flipped the people that I felt like I could beat and weren't going to come back together. And, you know, it was a very divided group where Jenna and Heidi and Christy really hated each other. And even in that scenario, all of a sudden, Heidi and Jenna were back with Christy. Like, no, Christy, we liked you the whole time. And it almost came back together. Like, Christy really considered going back with them. So just because you go with the other side doesn't mean the numbers aren't going to organize in a different way against you. So there's just was not that daylight for Laurel where if she makes that flip, all of a sudden you put her in the final three and she's probably going to be the winner of the season. I don't know, other than some sort of, you know, miracle Hail Mary run here for her. I don't see the scenario where she wins. So just to rake her over the coals for this specific move, I think just speaks more to people's frustration with the season as opposed to what's ultimately better for her.
I mean, the interesting thing that I wonder too is looking back on this game, and I talked about this a little bit with Kellen, I've been trying to figure out, like, what is the flashpoint? What is the moment where Laurel's game could have really been improved? And maybe it was, you know, last week when they had those votes lined up, but I might harbor a ballot here for the divided tribal council, and Laurel doesn't need to do anything. I think, oddly enough, if Kellen had used her extra vote and piled the votes on Wendell with Michael, and Wendell goes, that might have been the best route forward for Laurel's game, ironically enough.
I wonder, that's a good point, but maybe telling Dominic about Desiree's plan, I think she should have let that play out. I like the idea of sort of like the Littlefinger strategy of just having the world burn down around you. And if Desiree wants to go ahead and, you know, make this move with the Malolo people and take out Kellen, she could potentially go back with Dominic and Wendell. Like, Kellen, I do think, was a big blocker for her in terms of the game, because it sort of kept alive the Navidi strong alliance possibilities for Dominic and Wendell. And if you took Kellen out of it, it's like, okay, well, now who's the next to go? Dominic and Wendell. And they might be mad at Laurel and Donathan, but they kind of need Laurel and Donathan to be able to get their game back on track. So I think that she maybe should have let that all come together, because she, if it didn't work out, if for whatever reason, oh, Desiree is trying to rile up the Malolos, I don't think that that was going to be the kind of thing where people were going to hold her accountable, where I guess maybe Dominic might find out about it and say, why didn't you tell me about this, Laurel? You're in big trouble now. But I think that she could sort of downplay, oh, that was Michael. That was, you know, I just didn't want to, like, I knew it wasn't going to work. And I kind of feel like that maybe that could have been the point in the game where we end up with a swing where now there's enough Malolo in the mix where she could be able to, you know, have something going with, you know, a Donathan and a Jenna. If they could get Michael out, who's also somebody else who might do well with the jury. So I think that maybe that big swing could have been like, just all of her eggs ended up in the Dominic and Wendell basket. And it's not a great group for her to ultimately win the game.
And you also wonder if her choice to tell them as well might have sullied a relationship with Desiree, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she could have been aware of the plan. She didn't need to necessarily tell them about it. So even if the plan sunk, which, you know, maybe it would have, considering that it doesn't seem, I don't know if any of the other Malolos really would have gotten aboard of it, she can sort of plead the fifth on it, but I don't know. I feel like Snitches Get Stitches is going to sort of play out now, maybe like five episodes from now. And you know, Desiree did not necessarily leave the game. She had her, it seemed like she had her ill feelings directed specifically towards Laurel, which at the final 10 is never something good. When you have someone sort of stewing in Ponderosa for those several days thinking about, well, it was because of Laurel who told on me. Right. That's the reason why I'm sitting here.
You know, if there could have been some sort of Malolo rally plus Desiree plus Chelsea plus Angela, you're looking at Laurel there like, oh boy, she's probably, you know, either a favorite or second or maybe worst third out of that grouping. Whereas now she's just looked at somebody who hasn't really made any sort of big moves to date. You know, still a few rounds of play left, but to make a move for the sake of making the move here, ultimately, I don't think wins her the game either.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you talk about big moves, because I know that, you know, certain internet postings on social media in the past couple days have sort of theorized this idea of, like we talked about before, you know, we've just been talking about how some of these people are not necessarily making the most optimal moves, but the decision, again, to have Laurel be the vocal person behind the, you know, the hesitation to really go against the pairing, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, and I know others have been trying to think, if the show is trying to almost put her in the pillories to say, you know, this is what happens when you don't make big moves.
Okay, this is a great point, Mike. I want to get into this with you. Charlie Roberts tweeted and said that your friend and mine, Mario Lanza, had a great tweet about fans' frustrations with Jeff and his obsession with big moves, but then having frustrations with Laurel and her lack of big moves. Can there be a middle ground? Or will fans be clamoring for big moves after a season lacking them? And the tweet that Charlie was referencing was that Mario tweeted, quoting Survivor fans, "Jeff Probst, turn the show into a joke. Stop whining about big moves. Big moves are silly. Just let them play." At the same time, Survivor fans this week, "Laurel, you better start making big moves or else we'll stab you. You're ruining the show." So, Mike, is it the show, as some people have said? Okay, is Laurel being hung out to dry by the show in terms of saying, see, this is what happens to you when you don't make big moves? Or is that coming from the chorus of Survivor fans who are saying, Laurel, you didn't make big moves. Watch, you know, how mad we're going to get at you.
Yeah, so I'll be careful with my words because I know I'm going to be talking with Mario in about a day or so, and I don't want to earn his ire on the various podcasts that we do. I don't know. I'm going to disagree with his post a little bit because I feel like he's sketching a very, very broad picture of this situation. It's not that we're saying do something crazy. We're saying do something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a difference. You know, I feel like what some people's, to the first point of Mario's post, what some people are sort of getting a little fatigued with are the Sierra Eastons claiming, hey, this isn't good for you, but you need to flip and help me because you need to make big moves. You need to cause all this chaos and fill your resume, et cetera, et cetera.
The unification of Sierra, big moves, and then Zeke got it too in terms of big moves, big moves, big moves. Ha ha, what a joke. You think you have to make big moves to win Survivor. And now here's Laurel this week, and she's like, well, I'm not going to make the big move. I want to make the smart move. And people, oh, what a joke she is. Oh, she thinks she's making the smart move, not the big move. What an idiot. And here's the crazy thing. If Stephen Fishback or Sophie tweeted out sometime 2 months ago, hey, it's not about making the big move on Survivor. It's about making the smart move. Oh, it would have been retweeted, favorited. Everybody would have been like falling over themselves. Oh, see, these guys totally understand the game. But Laurel says it and she's a joke.
Yeah, it's unfortunate timing on the quotes part that it came sandwiched in the middle of, again, like, these guys are my friends, which I will say from a gameplay perspective, yeah, let poo-poo on it, but I don't know. There's something about me as someone who is still sort of captivated by the human and emotional elements. That's another reason why I really like that pre-merge. And I'll be like, Graham, I'll stand against you on your take back in like episode 5. I love that Stephanie Johnson episode in terms of capturing the pure emotion of what it's like to play Survivor. But I mean, that's such a tough thing, even for someone who loves the show, as an obsessed with the show, something that really does not come across is this idea of you spent 24 hours a day with a person. And then you're going to say, especially that far down the line, working together with them almost a month, like, hey, that plan you have to, you know, help your family, sorry, I'm gonna have to, you know, crush it. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's why I would never play the game, for a myriad of reasons, is that I'm far too sensitive of a person to really compartmentalize those thoughts in my head. But yeah, I think that it's interesting that you mentioned Sophie, because I feel like it's sort of, I don't know, Sophie is a great example of someone who, you know, stands in defiance of that first point where, like, she didn't make big moves, but she didn't need to because she had a plan and she executed it and she spoke about it. She was able to speak to it at the final tribal council and that got her the win. So I feel like that's sort of where folks are taking umbrage with that idea. And I think that the second point really is just, I don't know, it feels like a two separate situations. So I don't know if Mario is necessarily making a salient point by trying to sort of paint the fan base in sort of that hypocritical light, but I mean, the fervor on social media this week has been palpable, so I feel like it does speak to a portion of that. I just don't know necessarily if you can compare those two situations. Oftentimes, the best move is not necessarily the most entertaining move. There's only so many fireworks you can create before you start just sending up sparklers that just sort of shower you with a tiny bit of light there. So I feel like as television viewers, we always want things to get jazzed up. That's why some of our favorite seasons, your Cagayans, your Koh Rongs, your Pearl Islands, have these exciting post-merges where things sort of go back and forth, because we don't want to necessarily have things remain stagnant. But Survivor players also shouldn't necessarily be playing for us. You know, they should be playing to win the game. So this is one of those opportune moments where the desires of the players on the island versus the desires of the viewers sort of butt up against each other. And this is when the frustration really comes out, unfortunately.
Right. And I also want to just give Dominic and Wendell even more credit in terms of keeping their alliance intact, because especially Wendell, we've seen him a couple of times voice about how Laurel, she seems like she's thinking about different things. She doesn't seem like she's 100% on board. And we've seen him do such great alliance management with her and taking her aside, having those conversations with her. Dominic and Wendell, they bring her on the reward with them this week. Dominic in a secret scene is also talking about how, you know, it was really important to bring Laurel with them because they really want to shore her up and make sure that she's with them 100%. And then also, I thought that Wendell did such a great job at the immunity challenge when, you know, most Survivor contestants would have really had a hissy fit about what happened with the call on the field. Wendell let it go. He did not make a big deal about it. And I think that that was because it was with Laurel. And I think that he wants to keep her feeling really, really good about working with them so that she doesn't flip. So I think that for those guys as well, I think that they are owed a lot of credit in terms of keeping somebody like Laurel from flipping against them.
If only Rob with two B's was playing in that immunity challenge, he would have had a very different reaction to how things went
down. Would have burned it down. Okay. Mike, let me bring you a email question from one of our listeners. And this is from Julianne. And Julianne writes in to say, "Hey, Rob and Mike, it's Julianne from DC. Everyone seems to be a bit confused why Laurel hasn't made a move against Wendell and Dominic since she repeatedly mentions making a move in the confessionals. Could this be a case of split personality where Laurel is loyal to Wendell and Dominic, but Yanni is the one who wants to make a move? Would love to hear your thoughts. Love you, Baze." Mike, what do you think about the split personality of Laurel and Yanni?
So I wonder, because Survivor uses different editors for every episode, maybe an editor comes into the booth for that episode, and if they hear Laurel, then they'll go with that storyline of, okay, she doesn't want to flip, she's good with them. But if they hear Yanni, they'll put in a soundbite about her wanting to flip. And that's why things have been so flippant, is because the editors are hearing completely different things.
See, I think that the personality that wants to make a move is Laurel. That's who we see in the confessional. But I think that she has this split personality, not unlike a Sasha Fierce, who is Yanni, who doesn't want to make a move. So I would say she's more of a Sasha, not that fierce. So Laurel wants to flip. Yanni wants to stand pat.
Yes, a sash of fierce, if you will. Yes. Yeah, and I mean, maybe, I don't know. I think that Yanni, I mean, if we see Laurel playing panpipes later on in the finale, maybe we'll know that that's the time for Yanni to come out and truly, you know, destroy the competition.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Dominic and Wendell, and let's play this voicemail for you, Mike. And this is from our buddy Matt Noble, the Noble One.
A Noble One.
Hi, Rob and Mike. It's Matt Noble. This season, players like Laurel and Kellen have had shade thrown at them, and justifiably so, for not making their move soon enough. But if Dominic and Wendell both get to the end together, one of them's going to lose to the other person. And while that is harder to tell for probably them and us, the viewers at home, it would be a mistake for whoever that loser is to go to the end with the other person. And with them both being safe at the final five and there being a fire-making challenge for the final four, don't whoever that losing player is need to make that move at the final six? And when this season is said and done, won't we look back at the final six as the moment when Wendell or Dominic lost the game? Thanks.
Mike, I'm fascinated by this question. And for all the talk of, you know, when is Laurel going to make a move, that we have these two guys in Dominic and Wendell, and they are far and away the presumptive favorites to win the game. And I think really at best, people are looking at, if they both end up in the finals, it's a coin flip, which one. So if they stick together, I'd say there's close to a 100% chance that they both get to at least the fire making. And who knows what could happen in the fire making challenge. And then ultimately, if they're both in the final three, it's basically a 50-50 proposition for the two of them. Now, I don't believe that a game theory analyst is one of your credentials, Mike, but is it?
No, I have a degree in economics, but it's as applicable as my degree in theater nowadays, which is none.
So, Mike, that should Wendell and Dominic be thinking about, do I need to cut the other person to go to the finals? Because without the other person, you would think that Wendell or Dominic would have close to a 100% chance to win, unless I am grossly misunderstanding the dynamics of what's going on in the game.
Yes, but they also have close to a 100% guess of going right after the other person. And I don't mean targeting. That's why I think this pairing's so interesting, because there could be an argument put in after the season. Maybe this is another addendum to our podcast constitution that we're doing in the offseason, is maybe the best Survivor twosomes, where this is a pairing that have never, even up to the penultimate episode, talked about taking out each other. I mean, even someone as lauded as JT and Steven, well, this is when Steven was starting to talk about getting him out. Yeah,
Dominic did mention it at one point. He did. There was one time he mentioned it.
Right, but one time out of what, the 70 something confessionals?
Oh, you
he
just
had.
Said that's they all. Haven't mentioned it. That's all.
Yeah, okay. But they mentioned it once. I'll amend my statement. But the fact of the matter is, one of the reasons why they keep talking about this, whether it's in the secret scenes, I think they also mentioned it a couple times on the show proper. One of the reasons why they want to work together is because they're looking at each other and they're saying, okay, if one of us leaves, the other one is going to be in kind of a crappy situation. So let's just go in there together, have it face off, mano a mano, even though there might be another mano or womano sitting next to us, and let's see where it takes us. Now, granted, to the point that you're making, because there are such few rounds left, there could be the chance where if one of them gets taken out, the other one could, through idols or winning challenges, sneak their way into the final three. But I think one of the reasons why they haven't targeted each other up to this point is because if Wendell goes out, Dominic is looking like a real juicy target. He doesn't have another person that can function as his eyes and ears, and he becomes that much more of the danger. I feel like one of the main reasons why these two haven't been, and ridiculously enough, have not really become big targets is because they've been working together and they have each other. I feel like you can speak firsthand as to how important it is to have another set of eyes and ears that you completely confide on the island. And because they've been able to sort of spread their social seed, if you will, and reach out to the people that they want to and make those connections and strengthen them, that's been able to get both of them through. Now, is there a point where they should cut each other? Yes, to, you know, the noble one's point, there's going to get to be a point where one of them loses, and then we look back with hindsight and say, oh, should this person have cut this person here? But if you look at it from the mind frame of where they are day by day, I couldn't really think of a point where they should say, you know what, I'm going to cut Dominic today, because then that's going to really chart my path forward.
Yeah, there's probably not a point where we've seen, and six does seem pretty early on for one of them to take out the other, where let's say Wendell got together with Laurel and Donathan and Seabass and then took out Dominic. I mean, I guess it could work, but you do run the risk of then everybody turning back around at the final five. And now I guess Wendell could play his idol and he gets at least to four. So I guess there's a possibility, but I think that probably where you're going to look at it is getting down to four. And I think they might just feel like, in the same way that they were acting in that split tribal council immunity challenge of, hey, let's just play this out. Let the best man win. And I'm not giving in to you. You're not giving in to me. Let's just, you know, take this down as far as we can get. One of them is a likely contender to win immunity at the final four. I think that that will be the compelling decision of, if Wendell or Dominic wins immunity at four, will they take the other into the final tribal council, or will they force the other into making the fire? Where I think that that could be sort of like the get out of jail free card for either one of them to say, hey, you know, we got there, you just didn't make the fire. I needed you to knock out Laurel or Seabass or whoever, and then you couldn't get it done. Too bad. I would have loved to sit there at the end with you, brother.
You know, I know you made this point with Kim. Could they have the whole, and they haven't seen Ryan get castigated over this, but could they pick the person? Because what I'll be very interested to see is how, you know, Dominic talked about this, because I was reading over my notes, I think back in like episode 9, about the new final tribal council format. And he said that, you know, the new final tribal format allows you to essentially say, yeah, I stabbed my best friend in the back, and here's why, with more of an open forum discussion. If Wendell wins, picks Dominic to come with him, he can say, like, hey, I chose him to come with me. I think that says enough about our relationship. Because I think that by far the most interesting thing that's going to come out of this finale, because I think we kind of know that the two of them are going to be making it, is, and you've been talking about this for weeks at this point, how do you differentiate who sort of represents what part of the game, who's made what relationships, and ultimately who's going to get more respect that's going to garner those jury votes? And perhaps a move of, I won this challenge, I'm the one that took you, that was my decision, showing that is my, me sort of playing the upper hand in the final, you know, juncture decision-making point of the competition, that could bear a lot of weight.
Okay, Mike, let me play a question for you. This is from Kieran from Maryland on this subject.
Hey, Rob and Mike, it's Kieran from Maryland. First, Mike, I'm really enjoying the Survivor Historians. Really looking forward to the third episode of Samoa. All right, so I want to talk about the fire-making twist at the Final Four, which was introduced last season. Obviously, that's coming back again. Personally, I'm not a fan of it because it takes away the voting process at the Final Four, and I feel like it only benefits the person who wins the challenge. Mike, my question to you is, do you think the person who wins the Final Four fire-making challenge is guaranteed to win the season similar to last season?
Mike, I think this is an interesting question. Do you feel like the person that makes fire will be the winner of the game?
Well, first, thank you for the kind Survivor Historians comments. Part three coming to you in late 2019, most likely at the rate we're going. I mean, it's a sample size of one. Okay. So I really can't make that many assumptions.
That's the question for you. That will the person who makes the fire also win the game?
I mean, let's say Wendell brings Dominic and Laurel wins fire against Donathan. Do you think that gives her a bigger chance of making it? I don't think it's entirely hinged upon somebody winning the fire making. Now, if it's somebody who has a good case, that's definitely a good plus to put in your column. Like Ben, for example, who, as we talked about, was able to do a lot of show-offy things, peacock a lot at Tribal Council with all of the idols, and now he had this final thing to say, hey, I had my back against the wall, including this time, where I was literally not taken to the final three, and I had to win my way through there. But if you have someone that is drawing dead or is in a weaker situation coming in, think about, like, you know, Mama C against Rodney. For example, that might not necessarily, and one of the reasons Mike did that is because he said, well, let's sort of, embarrass them a little bit and really show them, have it be sort of a microcosm of how they've just sort of been stumbling through the game, which I would not attribute to Mama C, because I do think she's a very underrated player. But I think that if you're drawing dead going in, it might make things thank you. Glad to see you in Boston a couple weeks ago. It might make things a little bit better. It might bump you up from like 5 to 7%, but that still gets you out of the plurality.
Okay, so you've done a great job of explaining it is not going to be a magic bullet for anybody who ultimately wins fire. But Mike, do you think on Wednesday night we will watch a person make fire at the Final Four Tribal Council and then go on to win the game, yes or no?
Oh my God, you're fishbacking me right now.
And you can't say both people, Mike.
Yes, both people will move on and win the game in the first joint win ever in the Final Four Person Tribal Council. I am going to say, because I sort of have this weird situation in my head where, like, and maybe this is me, I'm known on the B&B for writing extremely weird fan fiction, very convoluted. So maybe this is the convoluted fan fiction that I want to happen in my head. And it would just be too, I wouldn't say funny, but like ironic, if Laurel wins the Final Four immunity and says, all right, here we go. Finally going to cut Dominic and Wendell apart. Let's do this. She picks Dominic to come with her. Wendell beats Donathan in the fire making. And then it's going to be the final three of them. And perhaps Wendell wins because of that. You know what? I'll stick to my guns here. I'll stick with my gut in honor of our most recent boot. I will say no, the winner of the Final Four fire making will not win this season.
Okay, there you go. I'll say they will. That's, you know, who cares? I will say that they will. I feel like
after
Laurel,
holding my feet to the fire, you end with, yeah, who cares?
Very good. I feel like it should never be that difficult to make one of these calls because it's like, you know, it's a stupid podcast. Who cares if we're wrong? But that I feel like
I can think of many people in the comments sections who will care that we're wrong, Rob.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, look, when I'm finally right, then I'll see what they say about me in the comment section. But Mike, if Laurel Laurel wins the final four immunity challenge, I think she's got to put Dominic and Wendell both into the fire making challenge. So at least you can get one. This is like the Big Brother thing where it's like you got to put the showmance on the block because, okay, at least one of them will go home. Whereas if you leave the other one off, they could win the veto and take the other person. Then they're both still there next week.
Yeah, right. Or else maybe when they're up there in the challenge, then Laurel can convince the person that could win the challenge to step down and shoot it all to Sunshine.
Right. So I think
Jonathan. Both him and the person we're referring to both have an indistinguishable accent. So really, the shoe fits there.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, let's then take this question. This is from Manuel from Cali.
Hi, Rob. This is Manuel from Hayward, California. So there have been a lot of discussions this season between you and Steven and others ranking Dominic and Wendell in terms of who the better player is or who has the best chance to win the game. And while Wendell's my winner pick, and I'm certainly rooting for him, I think Dominic's got the inside track. And if they both go to the end, I'm afraid that Dominic's gonna win out. And here's my theory on why. Whenever people refer to Dominic and Wendell, it's always Dominic first. Now, this includes the players in the game as well as the fans and the commentators such as yourself and Steven and others. Think back. When we refer to Dominic and Wendell, it's typically usually Dominic and Wendell. So what do you think? Does that have any kind of merit? Is the fact that you often hear Dominic's name first an indication that he has the inside track and is likely to win the game? Thanks. Love to hear your thoughts.
Mike, what do you make of this? That do we talk about Survivor contestants in a pair? And is the order we talk of them indicative of how they would perform in front of the jury?
I love this because it feels like a vaudeville pairing that's like arguing over the marquee of whose name goes first.
Yes.
It should be Wendell and Dominic, damn it, not Dominic and Wendell. I founded this pair. I wonder if it's like a poetic thing as well. You know, like the syllables, we've got three versus two. Like Wendell and Dominic just doesn't flow as nicely out of the mouth as Dominic and Wendell. Though maybe to his point, we've sort of been conditioned to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we took a look at some of the other pairs in Survivor history, I don't know if it holds up because nobody was ever talking about Amber and Rob.
Yeah, exactly. It's always Romber, right? maybe you have to build from the portmanteau out and see, like, maybe the one who fits better in the front half is who's at the top. I mean, I don't think 13 weeks in, have you figured out a perfect portmanteau for the two of these guys yet? Now I'm not going to refer to them by name because I don't want to, you know, influence anyone's opinion here.
We got a voicemail from one of our callers, Jesse, who said they should be Doomy Wendell.
Doomy Wendell could be linked to the theory as well, that because Dominic's name is the first part of there, and that he is also the verb in the sentence, that he's the one providing the action and is therefore the one that's getting the attention.
What about Steven and JT? Are they referred to as JT and Steven or Steven and JT?
I refer to them as JT and Steven, personally. That's sort of breaks my syllable rule, because those are two syllables. Maybe when they're the same syllables, you go in alphabetical order. I'm not sure what the taxonomy on all of this is, considering that, to the point you made before, we have spent the past week on the internet collectively debating the English language and our hearing capabilities. So, I mean, it's a good point, though. I mean, maybe from a future for Survivor players perspective, like, if you put yourself in a pairing and always put your name first, that might get the idea going in someone's head of, okay, they're the one that's leading the relationship because I hear their name first.
Mm-hmm. Mike, are you and Angela referred to as Angela and Mike, or Mike and Angela?
Feel like, I mean, if we're talking about a realistic relationship schematic, it's got to be Angela and Mike. If I be completely honest, I mean, she is not nearly as good with seesaw guts as her show
Mike,
counterpart.
Family podcast.
there was actually a really fun moment where in the gross food challenge, it came down to Angela versus Michael. And I just sort of looked at her and I went, huh. And then that was it. That was just sort of the acknowledgement that we had of, oh, yeah, there are two people on this season who have our names. But, yeah, I guess we go by Angela. I mean, you go by Rob and Nicole, right? But that's more so, I'm assuming that's based on, like, number of podcast appearances.
Yeah. All right. Mike, do you have a pick between Dominic and Wendell?
This is a tough one, since, again, you've talked about this. It's really tough to sort of split apart what what they contribute to this sort of, I don't know, massive cell that they are together. I'm going to go with Dominic, maybe just to be a little contrarian from you and Steven, just because I totally agree with what you're saying with Wendell sort of giving this good cop dynamic and, you know, being the mom who, after you skin your knee, gives you a Band-Aid while the dad says, like, suck it up, you're okay. But I think that, and this is what sort of come out of my interview with Kellen, and I think she talked about Josh with this as well. You know, Wendell's been cultivating relationships, but the tough thing about Survivor, about relationship management, is that sometimes when you vote against those people you made relationships with are not particularly happy. I think that Laurel, or that Kellen, went back to Laurel after that tribal council, that split one, and said, basically, Wendell's been dating both of us at the same time. He even took us to the same restaurant. The chefs know our names, they know our orders, but we haven't had any idea about it, because she saw firsthand that, you know, Wendell walked over to
Laurel. A real doubtfire situation.
Absolutely, and Wendell doesn't even need to put his face in coconut cream pie to try to simulate... Hello, Jeff. This is Matt Van Wagner. You have to recall the challenge now. Wendell wins.
Sorry, I was interrupting your very good point, Mike.
No, I mean, I think I made a better point about Wendell masquerading as Matt Van Wagner as Mrs. Doubtfire. I think that was the much bigger point I was trying to make.
Why would Jeff think that Mrs. Doubtfire was Matt Van Wagner?
I don't know. It's been a long off season. Maybe Matt came back with a new attitude. Or maybe you could say, like, this is Matt's mother. Or wait, no, he could say, this is Aunt Patty. I know you love me. I put back on the kitchen heels. Now look, Jeffrey, if you don't give Wendell the win, I will pound you into the ground.
I'm country, remember?
Yes.
You know what that means.
I'll reach out to your children as they turn 18 on Facebook, and I'll say that your father robbed a man of a good Survivor slide puzzle win. Is that what you want, Jeffrey?
Okay. let's... I don't know where to go after that.
I have no idea where to go from that. No, I guess what I was saying was that I think the downside of this is, you know, if Kellen was feeling particularly burnt by the way that Wendell had sort of strung her along and then clipped her in favor of these other people, that might have sort of come back to bite him. Whereas, you know, Dominic's a little bit of a WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Wendell might be a little more underhanded with the way he uses his relationships. And while that could work towards people of, hey, we made these closer bonds, to the point of what I was talking about before with Seabass, there might be a certain contingency who's like, hey, yeah, we did some really cool stuff together. If Wendell votes out Seabass, Seabass is like, what about the shell, man? You know, and then you cut me. I'm going to vote for Dominic now. Mm-hmm. So it could be that Dominic might, in addition to, you know, I'm going to disagree with what you said about Chris. I feel like Chris has so much respect. I feel like Chris would be the type of person to say, look, like, you know, to the best got beaten by the best. I have to give credit to Dominic here. And I feel like there might be some mentality there as well, coupled with maybe some people who feel a little resentful towards Wendell stringing them along for a bit. It could completely flip-flop, and that's what's going to make this final, like, 40 minutes of the finale so exciting in particular. But I'm going to put in a pick for Dominic right now. And not just because that would also make Nicole Stradamus like 5 picks in at this point.
Please, it's going to be a long summer at my house. For that reason alone, you have to root for Wendell.
Exactly.
Here's something else that Wendell does that I don't think that we've touched on at all. But this was when Donathan was talking to Wendell about how that he is going to vote for Dominic in the finals.
I don't know where my place is at in this game.
All right. So we're working together, sir.
Wendell does a thing where
Yes. He
says at the end of sentences things like sir and friend, and he says a word that is very nice, but I feel like he really means a-hole. And it'll be interesting to watch if he does that in the final tribal council, because it's a good skill. It's a good skill when he gets a tough question where if somebody comes up to him and says, like, Wendell, how could you stab me in the back? Like, I had no intention of doing that, sir.
Yeah, it's like it's not a compliment sandwich. It's like a compliment after dinner, where it's like leaves you a good taste in your mouth. But like, I don't know. He'd be like, you know, No offense, but your game is trash, Broheem. I think your social relationships are that of the crabs that scuttle along the bottom of the ocean, friendo. I mean, it's a good tactic, and I think he said that. Chelsea said that to him last week too. So maybe he's rubbing off. I don't know. Totally tangential. I don't know if you noticed this when you were interviewing Kellen. And I love Kellen. I want to keep talking about her because I'll be completely honest. Maybe next to Seabass, she was my favorite person in this final seven. But interviewing Kellen was fun because Kellen liked to interview herself a lot of the time. So it was good to like get an extra like five questions in there because Kellen was essentially interviewing herself by the end of it.
Yeah, so she does the thing where, could I have made a move earlier in the game? Yes, absolutely, I could have.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's nice to like, all right, well, I had those questions. I could just sort of get them checked off. So instead, I know you usually go rapid fire, but she goes like rapid fire by saying, could I have done this? Absolutely. How many brothers do I have? One. Was that a $1 million decision? Sure. What's my social security number? Like, she's totally giving herself the survivor census.
I didn't notice that she did that, so maybe she didn't do it with me or I didn't pick up on it, but I typically call that the Garrett Adelstein.
God. There's so many things you could call the Garrett Adelstein, but I guess we can decide to tend it to that.
Do I like chicken and vegetables being brought to me at the poker table? Yes, absolutely. Is David Sampson a bad guy? I think so. I would have to think so.
Should I hold an open forum and essentially have myself discuss the entire time? Sure, that's how the Greeks did it. Why not?
Okay. I want to play one other clip for you, Mike, before we move on from Dominic and Wendell. That there was another point in the episode that I really loved where Wendell starts talking about this fake idol that he wants to make. And he comes to Dominic asking for some supplies.
Working on a good fake idol, and now I just need the paperwork.
Do you have all the packaging?
So you want packaging and the idol document.
I got a good throat, but I got it.
I loved that he is like coming to Dominic's warehouse with like a work order of, yeah, I need instructions and I need, okay, so let me check in the back to see if I've got the documentation. Okay, I think I've got it in the other warehouse. Let me take a walk over there, but I got it. I got you.
Well, I think that I'm even thinking more like Uncle Dommy's junk drawer. Like, hey, Uncle Dommy, I'm doing a school project. I need like, I don't know, a pair of scissors and like a postcard from Missouri. Yeah, hold on. Let me see. Let me rummage through here.
I got
hold
a
on
glue
everything
stick.
You kids give me.
I got a postage stamp.
Got some new Coke.
Charger from a flip phone. Okay, don't need that.
And then you have, like, I don't know, like, Cousin Donathan in the corner being like, what are you doing over there? That's my stuff. You can't dig through my stuff over there. You gotta tell me what you're doing, Uncle Donnie.
That was when he saw the guys going through everything, and he said,
that was weird.
It was weird.
I love Donathan this episode, by the way, because Donathan and Tribal Council reminds me of, and this might be a little too much of a convoluted comparison, but have you ever seen those, like, viral Facebook videos of the split screen where, like, half of it is like the Golden Girls theme playing and the other half is of this guy just like reacting to everything separately?
No.
That feels like Donathan at Tribal Council where like people will just make statements. Yeah, and he'll just be in the corner and be like, that was weird, or like, nope, you can't talk anymore, or tossing his hair to the side. I loved when the votes were coming in the revote, and he picks up his bulging Santa-like sack of things, and then when Kellen gets voted out, he just sheepishly puts it back down and looks over the audience like, wow. Okay. All right. So, I think Donathan would be the king of react videos if he wants to go into that territory.
Yeah, he is. He's like one of those people on Big Brother that before Julie or Arissa reads the votes, who's like standing up and like walking to the door, but then like didn't get voted out. It's like, oh, I guess I'll go sit back down then.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. Sorry. I cursed y'all out. Just throwing some truth bombs around on the way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, he had just this really bad read on what was going on where he thought that they were going to vote for Kellen, but then play an idol on Kellen. It was just seemingly like that would be a bizarre way to handle that vote.
Yeah. Well, Donathan comes from this interesting perspective in that I don't know. He might be sort of coming from the perspective that fans are wanting to see from someone like Laurel, in part, with like, you're a huge fan, you should want to do something. And I really do feel like we saw a guy who was frustrated and feeling much more cornered than he actually is, with him just being so mouthy. I mean, this was not an exact, you know, overnight transformation. We're not looking at a Wendell to Aunt Patty here. I thought that at least coming in, I thought Donathan was going to get eaten alive by this game, personally. Right. And to see, you know, Kenneth Parcell become Jack Donaghy has been fantastic over the course of this season. Even from, like, even in the first, like, bits, you know, he was very, like, humble and naive. But I feel like once he got power at Navidi, once Morgan got voted out, like, he started getting a little sassy. I remember back in, like, the second swap where Jeff says, Donathan, you know, does this feel good, bad, or neutral for you? And Donathan goes, hell, I don't know. I love that Donathan has sort of always had this attitude, but maybe it's been a little more, I don't know, under the radar. But now that he feels like his time is up, he doesn't care. He is just willing to say anything to anybody at this point just to shake up the waters in the hopes that something's going to fall into his pocket.
Okay, let me play a voicemail for you that I think you'll like from Brent the Shower Man.
What's up, Rob and Mike Bloom? This is Brent the Shower Man. My winner pick is gone, and I'm pretty sad about it. And I know, her game went downhill fast, and she didn't make all the right moves. But you can't deny that she played hard and was a fun character. I'm hoping, in true Kellen fashion, that you guys can put a positive spin on her time on Ghost Island. I think it's only right to pour one out for this season's true robbed G.Uttis. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
No, I thought Aris wasn't on the podcast this season.
It took me three times going back to say, what is he saying? G.Uttis.
G.Uttis, according to Sebastian. Can we before we get to the question, can we talk about that for a second? Smash the urn, because I have a theory on it, but I would love to hear your thoughts about it.
Smash the urn. Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, here's my theory. I think Sebastian saw the letters URN and thinks that for some reason, whenever the letter U is in front of a word, it's pronounced the long way U instead of the short way . So he saw URN, he thought, oh, yearn.
Smash the yearn.
Yeah, because he's reading it out. So I feel like maybe Sebastian might need to get hooked on phonics once more. He knows his way around hooks. But that's my theory. If we hear him talking about like getting sand in your yearnderwear, I think then we sort of have this theory hammered home.
Is there another word that you've heard him say that would help make this case, Mike?
Well, are there any candy brands with the letter U at the beginning of it? I feel like that's the true test. I love Seabass. Seabass is also great on, if you watch the extended scene, Sebastian is over the moon. I know people were saying like, oh, Sebastian must be pissed he didn't get taken on the reward. No, this was the reward for Sebastian. He was pumped beyond all belief to go to Ghost Island because he thought there were monkey skeletons around him. Like, he is adamant about the fact that, yeah, I'm surrounded by tiki torches and rice and monkey skeletons. I could live here for decades.
He also was very excited that Dominic and Wendell gave him a new nickname.
Who's it going to be?
The pirate. Sebastian's going.
Sebastian. Sebastian heading to Ghost Island. Now, you're clapping your hands. Are you excited about this?
I like how they call me the pirate, Jeff.
See, this is part of Wendell's strategy, like you're talking about. Like, we're going to have to, you know, send you away from camp. Pirate.
I just really like that they call me that. That's great. That's so exciting.
Well, this is the guy who preseason talked himself up a pirate. He said that he'd like to shiver the booty. And oh, no. I don't know if that says anything about his relationship with Jenna, but he's always fancied himself a Jack Sparrow. Now he finally gets his Isle of Tortuga where he can, you know, hopefully find another life in the game and live forever amongst the monkey skeletons, of which there was one in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. So maybe that's why he's so obsessed with it.
Maybe. All right. Could you put a positive spin on the Kellen era of Survivor? Ghost Island?
I would love to. Because like I said, I know that Kellen has drawn some consternation due to her, and maybe this is another, you know, narrative quibble of her sort of being saddled with this idea of Navidi strong. What I love about Kellen is that we got to see so many sides of Kellen. We essentially looked inside Kellen's head and experienced all the Inside Out characters in there for 13 episodes. We got elated Kellen, we got angry Kellen, we got disgusted Kellen, we got frustrated Kellen, we got grief-stricken Kellen, we got, you know, we got a lot of indecisive Kellen. I think that sometimes, because I'm not going to, you know, no shade to any of the other contestants out there. I think they're all, I really have enjoyed this cast overall. But I feel like sometimes the show likes to boil them down to who they are as players. I like to view who they are as people, and I feel like she's one of the people we got to know the most just because she is so darn expressive that we saw her run the emotional gamut. And yes, it might not have led to the best gameplay, but I loved getting to see her. My favorite, I mean, she was so goobery in so many of those moments out there that it really endeared me to her, and just being able to see how she reacted to everything out there without being shown in sort of a game body light really made me enjoy her, because it made me see her as a person rather than just, you know, a player on the chessboard of Survivor Ghost Island.
Will Kellen play again?
I think so. I mean, it's tough to say because she did, you know, come in seventh place, and I feel like that's one of those, like, awkward, you know, places where you go out. But I feel like if we're picking people to come back from the game, and there are a good amount, let's not forget about these bevy of pre-jury people who also got really good stories and edits, I feel like Kellen should come back. Wood is always an interesting question. I would like to see her come back, because she was just really entertaining to me. I loved her non-answers at Tribal Council, her weird metaphors. There were so many things that I personally enjoyed about Kellen as a character, and I would want none of it to change, but I would like to see how she approaches things as well from, like, I trust in my gut, and that took me to that point. Let's see maybe if I rely on another body part or something else, if that will improve my game or, you know, ruin it.
Tell me if you think that this is a little too out there and a little too meta, and I'm not talking about the guy that was on Celebrity Big Brother, yeah. But
where's the owl?
In terms of Kellen and her story, obviously we know that it was so much of...
To me, your gut is the perfect mix of your head and your heart.
Okay, so Kellen was this character who ended up that she was in a situation, she was in a marriage, she decided to throw caution to the wind, she got out of the marriage, she got divorced, and she followed her gut and got to Survivor, and she's going to play the game of Survivor the same way that she did in her real life, and she's going to follow her gut. And that got her to the game of Survivor, but she's almost like this person that had this transformative experience before she got to the island. So she's not like a David Wright or a Suri where I didn't want to get up off the couch, but then I got here and now I discovered that I'm this whole different person. She's sort of telling us that, hey, I was this person before, and then I figured out I have to listen to my gut, and now I'm here. So as a returnee, her story is a little convoluted in that she was already the person that followed her gut into Survivor, and now is she going to come back and be the person, and I'm still following my gut, and now I'm here again?
I mean, there have been lesser narrative reasons to bring people back.
I get it. But don't you feel like that in terms of a clear story, the story of her a second time is a little murky to me?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, but maybe her narrative isn't even based on her gut. Maybe it's more so like, hey, I got voted out because I was too much of a threat. You know, let me lay low and try to play down some of these awesome puzzle skills that I have. It's an interesting point that you bring up about her sort of having this formative life experience and using that to inform her game. Because what I have stuck in my head about this cast is coming in, Jeff kept talking about how he wanted to bring in people who are sort of at a crossroads in their life. And maybe he thought that would lead to more entertainment as well. But it's so interesting to see people play based on that. Like you said, Kellen based her game purely on instinct because she had been writing that instinct for the past several years, and it's taken her to this point of success. Then you have someone like Angela, who just lost out, you know, she just got closed out on this big community of people through leaving the army and through her divorce that she had really associated closely with. And her time in the army also talks about building short-term bonds, very, very close-knit. And so it makes sense that from her perspective, again, in this later game, we haven't seen too much of her, but I always think back to when it was the James vote and people were saying, oh, why didn't Angela flip? But if you think about it, she comes from an environment where she says, okay, if I make bonds with these people in the first 6 days, they're my family. She does that with Navidi, that even though they're split up, she's going to come back together and say, this is my family. This is my Ohana. I'm not going to leave them behind. I'm going to stick with them. So I think maybe it's one of these lower key narratives of this season are to look at certain players and look at what was their life situation coming in and how did they play based on those life situations. Because like you said, that doesn't often happen. Survivor many times is a transformative experience for a person. It's odd to sometimes have people base their Survivor games on those transformative experiences outside of the game.
Yeah, like she's telling us about the transformation she's made as a person before she got to Survivor, as opposed to watching it over the course of 39 days on Survivor.
Yeah, though I wonder, maybe another thing that we could see with her storyline, sort of like what happened with JT between Token Sheens and Heroes versus Villains, is, you know, she is hashtag Survivor Sunshine. Let's bring in some of those clouds and rain and see if a storm's a brewing, which brings to mind a great Kellen versus Sydney Gillen season.
Right. Sure it'd be great if she came back and was like, you know what? I came out of Survivor and I thought that everything was going to be great. And I realized that going on this show, it's not all it's cracked up to be. I spent a lot of time with Bradley. And
yeah, exactly.
You know what? Now I'm really salty. I'm not an optimistic person anymore.
Yeah, so get ready for pessimistic Kellen is here.
Kick-ass Kellen is here now, okay?
Exactly. You suck. Screw you. That shelter doesn't look right.
Yeah. Yes. You think that Bradley's personality has rubbed off on her?
Yeah, I mean, that when you get into a relationship. When you get into a relationship, you would like rub your sometimes your qualities rub off on each other and sort of mix into one lugubrious person. Maybe that happens with Bradley and Kellen.
No, that'd be very interesting if we saw that.
Good job, guys.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about the puzzle, Mike. Trisha
yes!
writes in. She wants to talk to us about the puzzle. She says, Robin, Mike, do you think that Jeff was really offering Wendell a chance to protest the puzzle challenge when Jeff asked him, are you good? It was more like, are we done here? Because I figured if Wendell persisted enough, Jeff was going to tell him tough luck. Actually, he kind of did. Jeff said this was the first time something like this had happened. But do you have any insight as to whether there's actually any recourse against the call on the field? Let's go back to that moment in Puzzle Calling Gate.
Laurel wins individual immunity. Safe tonight at Tribal Council. Cannot be voted out of this game.
I guess I had to scream your name, I guess.
What? Did you call me?
I didn't call you.
Oh, you gotta call it. Wendell, you understand, right? Because a puzzle's not done until you tell me.
No, when I had it, I was like, and I didn't say anything.
I could have had it sooner than I called it, too, though.
100%. I heard Laurel say Jeff, but I don't know. 100%, I had it before you, but you called it first, so the ruling is that you got it.
So you have no problems with the fact that if you don't call it, I don't know if you're second-guessing yourself or not.
I agree with that.
Okay, so you're good with it?
Yes.
All right, it stands. Laura wins individual immunity. That's how we work it out on Survivor.
Mike, I have to say that this was a very Costanza-ish thing to have happened to Wendell, where he got the puzzle right, but he didn't call it. And then in true Seinfeld curve fashion, Jeff comes over and says, no, you didn't get it. You didn't call it. You got to call it. If you don't call the puzzle, then that's not a completed puzzle. And Wendell's
what?
Argument,
I gotta call the puzzle. I gotta call the puzzle now.
No, the act of completing the puzzle is completing the puzzle. I don't need.
I did the ta-da. I put my hands out. I did the magician like a magician. You know, he does a trick. He doesn't need to say, "Here's the trick. We're done." Abracadabra. They just say, "Here," and everybody claps. That's what they do, right?
Yeah. And Laurel, I like this. She said, "Well, I could have. I waited longer too to say, Jeff, come over."
Yeah, still trying to talk down Wendell, like, look, I put it easy on you. I think what made me laugh during this clip was it sounded to me like when like you pass someone on the street and like someone bumps into you and you like mutter something under your breath like a stupid asshole and they're like, what did you say? And you're like, nope, nothing. I didn't say anything. That's what that felt like, where Wendell just sort of muttered something and Jeff was like, oh, do you have a problem with that? And Wendell immediately sheepishly like says, no, I'm sorry. I thought it was this, but it's not that. It's okay, sir. I don't want to contest the ruling on the field. Give it to Laurel. I'm good.
If this was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, you know, there would be the moment back at camp when then Wendell like brings it up again and then Laurel is like really indignant about it, you know back there, I kind of had that whole puzzle, I kind of let you have that thing, and Laurel's like, no, but you didn't call it.
I think that's what's gonna happen at Final Tribal Council. It'll be like one of these things, like she'll be like, I won one immunity challenge, like, well, technically, I mean, yeah, there's an asterisk, yeah, next to it.
I don't know about that, friend. I think I had the puzzle done first, but I just sort of let you have that, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of rules here, compadre, that I was not aware of going in. And see, I was working against the rules of the system. We don't need rules. It's a slide puzzle. It could just be completed. So the camera caught it. The camera's caught it over there. But I mean, I'm just saying. You could keep talking. I'm just saying. Maybe it might be in the proper intro Curb episode if Wendell gets voted out. Because they're like, oh, you were an asshole to Jeff and you didn't, and you were so mean about not getting immunity that he gets punished for his actions at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a question also about the puzzle. This is from our buddy Anthony.
Hello, Rob and Mike Bloom. This is Anthony calling, and I have a question about the puzzle. Do you guys think that Wendell's finished puzzle should be on Survivor Ghost Island 2? And if so, are we going to see Francesca and the five-piece puzzle again, Mike Bloom? Thank you very much.
Wait, am I the five-piece puzzle?
Mike, do you think that in another Ghost Island season, could the five-piece puzzle potentially be out there on Ghost Island along with Wendell's completed puzzle? And would that be the loved one for Wendell's completed puzzle?
Well, I mean, I guess there could be a thing where, like, if it comes back again and now it has a different... Because remember, the first time its loved one was Spencer, and things might have been on the rocks, and then so a different one comes out, and that leads to Survivor community speculating a wild... I don't know, a 20-piece puzzle or a slide puzzle could be interesting in there. Maybe slide puzzle slid into five-piece puzzle's DMs and was like, listen, I know I'm the hot new thing, but you know what? I have a taste for the old school. Why don't you and me lay some piece down. I can show you my piece if you show me yours. But what would the advantage be from the slide puzzle? Like, Wendell did not get this because he didn't, you know, call it. You have to yell every piece that you're moving to Jeff Probst, and that's the advantage that you get.
Yeah. Do you think that in the future, Survivor contestants will just do the puzzle? I'm done. 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 I'm done.
I think considering that like Survivor contestants have like the mental capabilities of 3-year-olds by the time they're through with all the malnutrition and everything, I would not be surprised. Like, I did it. I'm done. I'm done now. I'm done, Jeff. Jeff, I'm done. That's what I would probably do if I was a contestant. Just like, I'll do a little dance about it. Even if I'm in the Dan Foley camp of being wrong. Like, I guess better safe than sorry. There's also this strategy brought up now of like, if you see an ally is working on the puzzle, but someone else is ahead of them. Could you, like, say, Jeff, come and check mine? Everyone puts their hands up and stops, and then you get, like, the other person to, like, study their puzzle and then be able to hopefully, you know, clinch it. It's those few seconds of silence that allows a person to be able to recontextualize everything and get ahead.
Now, Mike, I didn't catch this, but this was something that was from the social media from this week, and it was a great friend of the podcast, Tyler Fredrickson, who tweeted out after the episode, anyone else notice that tonight's challenge, when all was said and done, while Jeff was talking to Wendell over the did he, didn't he victory, as the game was supposed to be paused, even though Laurel had already won, off in the background, Angela was still working on her slide puzzle.
You never know. This is your time, Angie. You got this.
So yeah, Angela is gonna just keep going, and then she'll sneak in, Jeff, got it, I got it. Like,
Angela, it's night, you're supposed to be at Tribal Council right now.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I want to go back to something from the reward in the episode, and this is from Timmy in Chicago.
Hey, Mike Robin, this is Timmy Samari from Chicago, first-time listener, long-time caller, and my question is in regards to some potential foreshadowing that I think we saw at the reward challenge. So Dominic is telling this local Fijian woman, he's like, all right, this is the final three, it's us, and Laura's like, okay, who do you think is going to win out of us? And Dominic is all happy. I think she's pointing to me. And Laura's like, no. And meanwhile, she's really pointing her fan directly at Wendell. And Wendell's just seen smiling and laughing. So do you think this could potentially be how our story plays out? Dominic a little bit overconfident. Laurel just unsure of where she stands in terms of winning chances. And meanwhile, Wendell has it in the bag. Could this be the prophecy of the local Fijian woman? All right.
So, Mike, what did you think of the prophecy of the Fijian woman? Have you spent any time thinking about this?
It reminds me of when they have an octopus choose the Super Bowl winner. Like, here's this random thing, and it has no idea what it's doing, but it's just, it's been asked to indicate something, and we are going to trust in it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe the moment of the Fijian woman, or maybe the Fijian woman knows something that we don't necessarily know. Maybe she was a member of the crew that they dressed up and put on there as sort of a plant to maybe, if they don't want Wendell to win, to be like, okay, say Wendell's gonna win, and that way we can have them realize that, oh, if the locals want him to win, he'll get the popular vote no matter what.
Let me play you the clip of the Fijian woman being asked to make a call.
Who do you think the winner will be?
Which one?
He's looking at me.
There definitely was some confusion over who she was looking at. She's got to call it. If there's any lesson to be learned from this episode, it's that the fortune teller needs to call which person. She can't just stand there with her arms out looking at people.
Yeah, exactly. If anything we've learned from this episode of Survivor, you have to pick a side. You can't be wishy-washy. Where is the internet antagonism against this woman for saying, I don't know who I want to pick? You know, she's going to make a big move if she wants to teach these children.
Yes. There's a thread about this on Reddit as well, started by Chikoy Wahoy, I believe, my best attempt at pronouncing that. And people are split on, was she looking at Dominic? Was she looking at Laurel? Was she pointing her fan at Wendell, Mike? This is another controversy.
We're going to have to, like, I don't know, sketch out the shot mapping and see who is sitting where and where the fan could possibly be pointing. I mean, we got some more foreshadowing later on in the episode where Jeff sort of narrates the three of them doing the puzzle.
Yes.
Laurel, very methodical, quietly moving pieces. Dom, much more frenetic, and Wendell in a zone.
Yeah.
And he's about to be in the red zone soon, seeing red after he doesn't win that challenge.
But that to me speaks to the prophecy of a Wendell win.
You think that because he's oblivious, he's going to win?
No.
Laurel, very methodical, quietly moving pieces.
And that's like her game. She's quietly moving pieces. She's not making the big splash people want her to.
Dom, much more frenetic. And
he's like making fake idols and he's all over the place and like showing people fake notes. And then Wendell.
Still in a zone.
He's in the zone.
Well, I don't know what in the zone, like for me, in the zone sometimes refers to the fact that, I mean, I think he followed up with oblivious to everyone else, which isn't necessarily good. But I guess if he's in the zone, it's like the Randy Jackson in it to win it colloquialism. I just love that the kingmakers this episode apparently are a local woman and a slide puzzle. Maybe that's what the slide puzzle is going to be like on Ghost Island. Like, you can give this puzzle to anyone who you think is in the zone, and it will curse them with forever knowing that they're the chosen winner of this season.
Yeah. Look, that Survivor, it's Ghost Island, there's all these relics and things with magic, and so I don't think it's that crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a forecasting slide puzzle. Speaking of the relics, what did you think? I know you talked about the use of the the re-gifting of the extra vote from Kellen. Did you like that? As an alumni, I know your advantages wouldn't be in there, but did you feel spurned on behalf of alumni who could not have gotten advantages in there because one had been taken up?
Mike, I prefer renewable advantages, ones that aren't wasted and taxing on the ecosystem. So I like the idea of reusing advantages that we've already had made.
Maybe that's why the Fijian woman liked Wendell so much. He forced the misplay of the extra vote, which went back into the cycle so that they don't need to use another one and harm the Fiji ecosystem. But I'm assuming Sebastian loves to go green as well, which is why the extra vote worked perfectly for him.
Of course, of course. All right, Mike, we are headed towards the Survivor finale. Always a lot of hype with the Survivor finale, and it is so great to have you back here on the podcast because we always play before the finale. As the great Matthew Woj on Twitter likes to request the Who Will Not Speak at the Finale. Except this, it's canceled.
Yeah. Canceled. Yeah. Let's talk about this a little bit. Rob, I feel like we might have put a curse into the Survivor world. So long we have tempted the fates by talking about this when I believe we hit a tie last time. And we have yet to draw rocks to determine it. But I believe we both had a perfect game, a la Chris Noble with tossing rocks of 0-0 during the HHH finale.
Right. Because I believe that only five separate players spoke at the finale for Survivor HHH. I think that the only people that they spoke to, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I thought it was that they only spoke to the final three and Devin and Dr. Mike. And I'm not even sure. Maybe they talked about Lauren.
They talked about Lauren to get an introduction as to that shell advantage, which we have yet to see so far.
Right. Which I don't know if we're going to see it in the finale or not. So they didn't talk to anybody. So I thought that this season, maybe we can reverse the curse because we can now play Who Will Speak? It's gonna be
by default. Who's it going to?
So, Mike, we're back with another round of the draft, and so in this game, okay, what we will do is we are going to break this up into sections where we will draft a number of people from the pre-jury and then the jury. And then also we will select a non-playing character that will also get a question at the finale. Okay. So we are looking for people who do speak. You are looking to get the highest score.
I'm not going to topaz out here, Rob, hopefully.
Yes. Okay. We're going to award 3 points for a direct question, 2 points for a blurt out, 1 point for a name mention at the finale, okay? So we are looking for a pre-merge player that will speak, a post-merge player that will speak, and then we are looking for one non-playing character. So we will both draft teams of five, Mike. So I guess let's start with, are we doing pre-merge or pre-jury? How do you want to do it?
I mean, it's one and the same this time, so it's really just six eggs in one, half a dozen in the other.
So a couple of things here, Mike. So this will not be a snake draft. We'll go back and forth, but if you get the first pick in the pre-jury people, then you will get the second pick in the merge people. I also think that we should take Dominic and Wendell off the board for the people that they will speak to in the finale.
Oh, this game just got infinitely harder, unlike the games at Ghost Island. Wow. Okay. Well, I guess that's also an interesting proposition as well, because you're almost like risking your vote. You're risking like a first round pick. You know what? I will let you pick in the pre-merge first, because I feel like if we're going with this more condensed new way of doing the reunion, and we put that in loose quotations, the idea of a reunion, there's going to be less of a chance that they'll speak to the pre-merge players at all. So I feel like there's more weight there in the post-merge.
Okay. So I am looking for a pre-merge person that they are going to talk to, and with the first pick in the draft of pre-merge people, I'm going to go with Stephanie Johnson.
Oh, you had me going for a second. We might have gotten a Gonzalez question. I wasn't sure where you were going, so I'm glad you said the J.
Sad.
Yeah. Okay. Steph J. Okay. Mike Bloom, it's your turn.
Yeah, I mean, the pre-merge is full of a lot of rich characters, and I'm between two right now. Unfortunately, I feel like my girl, Morgan, some would say the next Kim Spradlin, in that she's gotten a bunch of chickens to put in her backyard recently.
Chris Noble is going to be the godfather of one of her kids.
Yes, exactly. I feel like Chris Noble has a better chance of being one of Morgan's godfathers than one of Kim's. But you never know with these Survivor connections. I feel like I'm between two right now. I'm going to go with the more recent person, the one who we spent more time with in the game. I know that Jacob made a big splash in his 2 hours back in the end of February, but I'm going to say Bradley.
Bradley. Oh, good one. Boy.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they might fear that if they cut to Bradley, he might just complain about
good
the conditions
job,
backstage at CBS, but...
Let's go.
I think they don't know what he's going to say. I think that's going to be the reason to stay away from him.
He might be blurting Bradley, so I'm going for those points.
Blurting
too.
Bradley, okay. You could get 2 points.
The newest doll, I would say, in the abandoned Toys R Us, all that are left are the blurting Bradleys on the shelf that have not sold a lick.
Okay. So then I will go with number three, and I will say that maybe Jeff is more likely to go with Brendan Shapiro.
Okay. And then, so I'm picking one more pre-merge person?
Yes.
Okay, then in that case, I'm going to go to Jacob. I know he was only on for a couple of episodes, but he had one of the biggest and most vocal flameouts that I've seen in quite some time. Not since the days of Zane Knight or the aforementioned Garrett Adelstein. And who knows, maybe he'll Adelstein his own way and ask himself a lot of questions. I don't know if that counts towards points, but if it does, I think it was a safe pick.
Jeff, is this game harder than it looks? obviously, I think it's a...
did I pour rice in my sock? Yes, unintentionally.
I absolutely did.
Jim, do I have a new album on SoundCloud? 100%.
Mirror from Manhattan? Well, funny story about that.
then he takes out a microphone and starts singing. And I think it goes a little something like this. Hit it, Russ Landau.
2, 3, 4. Okay. Mike. All right. So here we go. So if Stephanie Johnson or Brendan Shapiro speaks, we really should get 5 points for the pre-jury people.
I think we should get like 10 points.
100 points.
Yeah, let's get like 1,000 points. Okay. Since we scored 0, we can skew on the side of just giving unreasonably high scores.
Now, look, the game is evolving. Well, let's go 3 points for everything. Let's 3-2-1 for everything along the way. James Lim and Morgan and Stephanie Gonzalez did not get drafted.
Yes, they are the Angela in the reward challenge.
No shot at Ghost.
No shot at Ghost. No shot at Goodwill.
This is Ghost.
All right. Now, Mike, here's where it gets interesting. So, no Dominic, no Wendell. Who will speak?
I gotta start off with Chris Noble. I know he was the first member of the jury. Yep. Number one pick is Chris Noble.
Beneficiary.
I mean, he is one of the bigger characters of the season, and though he went out a while back, especially if we talk to Dom about his Chris rivalry, I feel like we gotta go to Chris, and Chris also might be a blurter too, of like, well, actually, that didn't happen that way, and you know that Jeff, maybe...
You live in New York, you get it.
Maybe if Jacob starts crooning, maybe Chris can come in and start, you know, hitting some bars like, Michael Jordan number 23 in CBS building number CB.
Finale.
The season 636 finale. I would love this if this just broke into a chaotic musical number at the very end of all this, with everyone just singing and a dance breaks out. I think that would be the perfect way to end Survivor Ghost Island.
And then will we allow Wendell to have a rebuttal?
Put the mic down, yes, exactly. Bro. Stop rapping. You're trash.
That would be a great ending to the Jacob Derwin musical number where
put the mic down, bro.
Oh, that's a little uncalled for. I'm sorry. I can't hear you all the way down there. I'm all the way back up in the top left. You're down right. I can't hear you from over here. The acoustics are terrible, hence the microphone, and it goes a little something like this.
Okay. All right. So I have the next pick, and I feel like that Jeff, no matter what happens, I think he's going to go to Laurel and is going to ask her, because like we were talking about before, he's going to say to Laurel, like, hey, why didn't you make a move? Why didn't you turn on these guys? And I think that's going to come up. He's going to ask her that question.
Yeah, I mean, if we're also going with the logic of what they did at the 35 finale, where, like, when a player's voted out, Jeff will, a la Big Brother, have them come out to greet their comrades, the big audience, and then sort of do a mini interview there. It's sort of automatic. And we're looking at her as the most likely, besides Dama Dicka Dooming Wendell, to end up in the final three, then that would make sense, too.
Yeah, okay. Mike, then your pick here.
I'm going to go with Donathan, because I know that once Jacob Derwin goes into his final chorus, as Chris is rapping the interlude, Donathan will get up and start popping, locking, and start spinning around the stage as he also starts yelling things about how Wendell and Dominic are still running the game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will go with Kellen. Let's make this interesting. Let's pick one more person each.
Oh boy, I was hoping we'd stop it there, because those are slim pickings. I guess, all right, let's think here. We've got Libby. Oh no, I'm going to Michael.
Yeah, that was the obvious slam dunk.
I was saying my love of Seabass slightly clouded. So yes, it's, I had smoke in front of my eyes that I wasn't able to see the clear possibility in front of me. But yeah, I'll leave Sebastian on Ghost, and I will pick Michael. We'll get the requisite quote of Michael. You're 18 years old.
Yeah.
You're a bit of a heartthrob. What are the people on the street doing to you?
No, it's going to be like, okay, everywhere I go, people are asking me about this guy, that he's, men want to be him, women want to be with him, parents want him to be their kid. It's Michael. That's where we're going with Michael.
This is Ghost.
And right. and then Michael, what is it like to be you? And I'll be like, oh man, it's just like, you know, just like every day, just like, you know, going to work and just living a regular life, and, you know.
Yeah, not to say that he's going to be a good conversationalist. I'm just saying that he's going to get a question.
Right.
We're not judging the quality of these questions, considering I just speculated that Jacob Derwin was just going to break into a 9-minute musical number with Donovan doing his best America's Next Best Dance Crew.
Yes. And then I will go with my last pick of the people from the merge that will speak. And I will say that it will be Sebastian. And I think that it's going to be like, I think that Laurel will get to the final three. I think Sebastian goes out in one of the first couple of votes of the finale. And then Jeff comes out and is basically like, all right, everybody, give it up for Sebastian. And then you're like, hey. So that's where you're going to get your Sebastian thing.
And I really hope that like candy pours down from the ceiling or something, or he offers.
Right now, I'm a taffy, smiley, giggly piece of Laffy Taffy, I guess. Banana flavored.
Or like he offers him like a spot in a great glass elevator and he takes it through the roof of the studio. Yeah. Maybe I'm just projecting what I want to see, considering this will be the first live finale. But if that's how it ends, this just might be the best finale ever.
Okay. All right. So non-playing character, do you want to take loved ones off the board?
I mean, there's one very... Ooh, actually, maybe not. Because I feel like there's one obvious choice.
Yeah, Aunt Patty.
There's Aunt Patty. Yeah, we get Patty! way.
Yeah.
We also have, but we like, if Dominic wins, right, there's a chance we could cut to his wife in the audience, who still will be, I am so mad that you won $1 million and I hope you spend it on the family that you've abandoned for 35 days.
Yeah. She'll be like, you know, I'm so I'm happy, but I'm mad because there's taxes. But no, I think that, so I feel that those are the two loved ones that I feel like that, let's just to be creative here. Let's take Aunt Patty and Kristen Abate off the board.
Okay. Then if I get first pick, I'm going to go with Cochran. I feel like it's like at any reunion, there's like a 67% chance that Cochran will either get mentioned or spoken to for some reason.
Oh boy. Now this is tricky here because it's like, could they go to somebody whose like advantage was misplayed this season? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I don't know if James Clement is in the audience unless they like Skype him in from the graveyard.
Jason Siska, could he be there? I'm going to go with do I have to like know their name? Like if I go with like a
if you can loosely describe yes. them, I guess we okay. can go off with that.
I'm gonna go with a 14-year-old girl that swooning over Michael Yerger. Some girl with like Michael Yerger paraphernalia, like a "Will you marry me, Michael" T-shirt, something to that effect. And then I gotta go down here. All right, this we have here one of the biggest Michael fans out there. Here she is. She has a question to ask Michael.
Julie, I see you're wearing a Yearning for Yerger shirt. Can you explain what that means? And then Sebastian speaks up. I believe it's Earning for Yerger.
Yeah. Smash the yearn.
Yikes. Okay. All right. There you go. That is the who will speak at the finale game. And so Mike gets points if Bradley, Jacob Derwin, Jacob Derwin, Chris Noble, Donathan, Michael, or Cochran speak at the finale. I will get points if Stephanie Johnson, Brendan Shapiro, Laurel, Kellen, Sebastian, or a young teenage Michael fan speak.
Now, the question is, how do we determine, like, if like there's someone who looks like they're in like their 20s, does that count, or do they need to specifically look, do we need to see like braces to determine if they're teenage?
I don't know if you need
teenage.
To see braces, but I think that look, if she is old enough to drink, I lose. Okay, if she is
all right, so if she's sipping back if she's drinking a Corona
age, right. Also, I do think that Chelsea's best chance for a question at the finale will be to dress up as a Michael Yerger stan and sit in the audience.
Yes, you young lady who I'm sorry, were you not sitting up there before?
You a young lady who looks strangely familiar. What about you? I'm like,
I just want to take the time to say how much I like Chelsea. Thought she was really underedited.
Yeah.
I have to get on a plane. I'm sorry. I have to leave now.
Yes. Okay, speaking of Michael Yerker, we actually got a phone call in about a controversy with Michael Yerger. This is Bob in Calgary.
Hey, Rob and Mike, big fan of the show. This is Bob in Calgary, and I just wanted to know if that man whore Mike Bloom might have a take on the controversy involving Michael Yerger and the Corona at Ponderosa. I figure that man whore Mike might know a thing or two about teenage drinking and whether or not he was drinking the Corona himself or if he was just passing it along to Kellen. Thanks so much, guys. Love the show. Bye.
Hey, Mike, did you see the Ponderosa video with the Corona in question?
This sounds like a bad game of Clue. It was Michael with the Corona in Ponderosa. I saw the shot. I do not like the insinuation that man whore Mike was connected to teenage drinking. My illicit activities were done 100% sober.
Yeah. So, Mike, you watched the clip of Michael Yerger. Did he sip of the Corona as they do at Ponderosa, from what I hear, or was he passing the Corona?
Yeah, from what I saw, and this is maybe what, you know, Donathan was so angry about in Camp Proper, it seemed like Michael was holding. It seemed like, from what I saw, because I remember seeing two distinct shots. One of Michael holding the Corona, the other one at the very end of Kellen giving a hug while holding a Corona. So I'm led to believe that he handed the Corona off to Kellen to drink. There's a splice of missing footage in there that we might be able to piece together using the same people that are able to figure out who Fijian fan lady is pointing to. But that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Oh, why did we not pick Fijian prophecy fan woman in our draft?
All right, follow that. Let's talk to this lady. This is the woman in Fiji who predicted that Wendell was going to be the winner when she pointed her fan at him. Fijian lady. Get down here.
I don't know. I pick you.
Yes. Okay. So you are a Michael Yerger, did not drink the Corona at Ponderosa.
Yes. I guess I should. We should shorten that term. I guess I'm a Michael supporter. I guess us Mikes have to stick together in that regard. So I personally believe that he was just holding with the intent to pass off a fresh Corona to the newly minted member of the jury.
Yeah. So, Mike, a lot of people are wondering about how Michael Yerger even got involved with a Survivor. Do you know the background to him getting on the show?
No, not really. I haven't delved too much into his origin story.
Yes. Okay, so we actually have the person who cast Michael Yerger on the show. We were able to contact them, and we have them who has a funny anecdote about how Michael Yerger got on Survivor. Let's go ahead and patch them into the show.
Oh, no.
So okay, we have here on the line, back with us, it's the Survivor Devil.
Bloom, I'm back. I'm so glad to talk to you again.
I'm happy to talk to you as well. You were the architect behind Ghost Island, so I think it's rather proper that we speak with you at the end of the season.
No, I'm a little confused why the Survivor Devil is here with us now. That the Survivor Devil claims that he works in casting and was actually the person that found Michael Yerger.
Yes, that is correct. I found Michael Yerger. When I met him, he was a 45-year-old guy that worked at a UPS store in Bayonne, New Jersey, named Eugene Rosen. In return for his eternal soul, he became Michael Yerger.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't even know anything about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. So, Survivor Devil, you have the powers capable to not only turn back time, but transform a person into an entirely different person with a different name to get them onto the show. What did you see in Eugene Rosen that made him become Michael Yerger?
I love it how Bloom is acting like he's not familiar with how the dark arts work. Bloom, it's the same deal that I made you to get you on 5 million podcasts.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize this contract was... I thought this was just a contract for me. Are you seeing other clients? Are you giving them the same contract? I feel like Kellen with Laurel and Wendell.
So many other people that I'm working with. I made a deal with Seabass as well.
What did you deal to Seabass?
$20 of Stony Baloney.
Oh, okay.
It's one of my better deals.
Is that you running that bagel place down in Florida for him?
Wow.
But seriously, I've been so busy with this Survivor Ghost Island. Really, one of my best creations yet, I would have to say.
I mean, I'm surprised that you said really busy, because when we talked at the end of the year, you were really prepping us about how this was your idea. And I'll admit, no offense, Survivor Devil, but I feel like a lot of people feel like it was a bust. Or were you trying to torture us in a completely different way than we initially thought by doing these no games for you? Here's an advantage that will not really be an advantage. Is this your, are you playing like five-dimensional chess right now, Survivor Devil?
Yes, I came up with exactly all of the different ways that Ghost Island was going to work. I was one of the chief producers of everything going on with Ghost Island. I also was seen this season, if you ever were able to get a freeze frame of Kellen's gut. That was me also the whole time.
So you were talking to her through her gut, like a Joan of Arc-like situation, telling her to make all of these incorrect decisions?
Yes, I also appeared in Survivor Cambodia as Stephen Fishback's gut.
What sort of, you're able to get in through a lot of digestive systems. It's a surprise. I thought that you'd get through people's heads, but I guess everyone has their means of possession, I suppose.
Yes, I've been very busy also. I am a writer for the RHAP B&B. I wrote the Mike Bloom take about Civil War movies being a pet peeve. That was something I also worked on.
I don't need to, we can't out the fact that, okay, you write these things for me, okay? I wanted to take all of that on the chin, that fantastically good take, and now you're selling me out. This feels like that movie The Front. Now my secret is blown that, yes, the Survivor Devil sometimes writes some of my pet peeves for me to talk about on podcasts.
Hey, Mike, I didn't even know that you had the Survivor Devil working on the RHAP B&B.
I actually have some complaints about RHAP as well.
Well, like what kind of complaints?
I would like to complain about the number of millennials versus Gen X people on Rob as a Podcast. There are not enough millennials versus Gen X people on Rob as a Podcast. There clearly should be more.
So you want to have an ideal season of RHAP for you would have all 20 people from millennials versus Gen X on every single week?
That is correct. Let's get two at a time if we can.
Yes, true Noah's Ark style of RHAP.
Survivor Devil, do you have a pick in terms of Dominic and Wendell heading into the finale?
No, absolutely not. That is wrong to rank them. No one should ever, even I would not dare to consider ranking Dominic and Wendell going into the finale. Can't do it.
I see you're still residing in Stephen Fishback's gut, from what I can tell.
You know, this whole season has been really busy for me. I also, in addition to producing on Ghost Island, I'm also the travel booker for Libby and Chelsea.
Oh, great. Survivor Devil, you're the one that booked Libby and Chelsea traveling during those times when it was tough to schedule those interviews for Rob?
Yes, they needed to get somewhere, and I said, wait until the day after you get voted off Survivor, then you travel.
Wait, now I'm thinking back. Did you work for the phone company that provides Morgan's service?
Yes, I worked for Morgan's phone company, and then also I have some other big things in the works. I'm actually the publicist for a Survivor 37 contestant. I just got him on TMZ this week, so things
no,
are really
Survivor Devil,
good.
That's not good. You're not. You don't want people to get people on TMZ, especially before their season.
Oh no, nobody told me about that part. I didn't know.
Well, Survivor Devil, I mean. What have you thought about Ghost Island as a whole? I mean, I really liked that these last couple of challenges that have been going on. What have you been thinking about them?
Yeah, the challenges have been good. Hoping that they take my idea for a fire-making challenge at the final five in Ghost Island. That's something I've been pitching.
How would that work? Do they just all make fire?
Yes. Yes. Every week, two people make fire. That's how the show will work from here on out. Hey, Bloom, what did you hear, Yanni or Laurel?
I personally heard Laurel. There was one point when I heard Yanni. I don't know. What about you? Don't tell me you invented this stupid dichotomy, did you?
No, I actually am the publicist for the musician Yanni, and this was a whole thing that we did to get his name back out there.
Wow, you made a really good investment there, choosing Yanni. It was probably a good decision you made, 25 years ago?
Okay. All right, Survivor Devil, we really need to start to wrap things up. Anything else before we let you go?
I love the music of Linda from Australia in the Wand Off. She's really killing it so far this season. Very excited about Survivor Australia Season 3. That should be pretty good as well.
I have no idea what's going on down there, but it's weird that you have a rooting interest.
And then I gotta go. I'm really busy. I'm a consultant on the next season of The Amazing Race, so I gotta get back to Frankie Grande. So, all right, I will talk to you soon, okay?
All right, sounds good. We'll speak soon. We've got to schedule some of those off-season podcasts, so I'll have Rob's people call you, I guess, and we can work it out.
See you soon, Bloom.
Okay, hopefully thank not you. Too soon.
Survivor Devil, thank you.
Wow. I had no idea that the Survivor Devil had such transformative powers. I mean, talk about, you know, someone who went through a transformation before coming on to the show. What would Michael Yerger's story be? I turned back into a 45-year-old UPS clerk, and I'm ready to play Survivor again.
Okay. A.K.A. Eugene Rosen. Now we know.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Okay. I mean, if only we had done the unscrambling. It was all right there in front of us, much like Wendell and Dominic's Endgame. If only we had known.
Okay. Mike, I have a question for you. This one is from Phil T. Wants to ask a question for you about this final week of the Survivor season.
Hey, Robin, Mike. It's Phil T. I have a question. So, as everybody knows, the final Wandoff is fast approaching. And to be honest, I got to say, I'm feeling a little uninspired. You know, I can't really – I'm having trouble writing some bars, writing some heat rocks, you know, writing some stuff that'll get the people going. And one of my Survivor rap idols is actually Mixmaster Mike. So I was just wondering
really?
If Mike could perhaps, you know, kick a little freestyle about the episode, Survivor, get me – get the juices going, you know, give me a little inspiration because – I'm feeling a little lost right now. That would be incredible. I would appreciate that very much. Thank you very much, Vinaka, and see you later, baby.
Vinaka, Phil T. Okay.
Vinaka.
Mike, do you have any encouraging rhymes that you might be able to lay down for Phil T heading into the finale?
Well, I mean, if he wants to not get lost, I feel like I'm just going to spin him in a completely other direction and point him to a place he doesn't want to go. But, I mean, I suppose since Chris Noble isn't going to take me up on an opportunity to do a rap battle, I suppose I could lay down some words of wisdom, Brendan Shapiro style, for okay. Phil T in his time of need.
Okay. I guess in the words of Jacob Derwin, let's hit it.
Reward challenge running about a bunch of spools. Wendell got defeated by a bunch of rules. Him or Dominic, who will take it and who will sit next to them and make it? Laurel sitting there for the flip or go, and Donathan throwing some bombs. Tribal Council show. Finale of Survivor Ghost Island will be a place where we've talked to Donathan's family in the audience.
Patty!
Patty! Or a 14-year-old girl, either way.
All right, well done, Mixmaster Mike.
Well, that was certainly some words put together. Cannot say it was one of my best, but I don't know if I can say any of them were qualitatively best at anything.
Hey, look, we don't need to be all Samantha semantics around here, okay? It was
yes,
great.
Yes, let's not bring her around. What did you think, by the way, of the reward challenge by the big Samotion with duos?
I loved it. I thought that was great. I thought it was very interesting. And, you know, it did not really pay dividends in terms of, you know, stirring the pot. But last season, I believe, when we were at the final seven, that was the reward where I believe it was it Chrissy and Devin that won
yeah.
reward? And then they ended up picking Ryan to go with them on, I believe it was an overnight reward and not just one going to away for the afternoon. But it really created animosity between Devin and Ashley in terms of who the pairing of people was going to pick. It didn't really do that this time, but I like that Survivor is doing that at the final seven.
Yeah, well, to that point, I wonder if it was the same place, if they went to Patty Paradise before it was coined
hey!
As such. Just because the Hotel Patty, once you leave, you can never come back. I guess there's only several resorts, but I like the challenge as well because I think it's the closest Survivor's going to get to simulating a scene from I Love Lucy. Like, it felt very much like Lucy and Ethel, like, trying to stuff the chocolates and get them, you know, wrapped up on the conveyor belt.
Yeah. It was interesting, though, that it sounded like from what Kellen was saying in the exit interview, I asked her about this, the draft order, I think she had the first pick, and I think she took Seabass one. And I couldn't believe that she let Dominic and Wendell end up working together on that.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of her choosing Sierra in a Who Won't Talk at the Survivor Cambodia finale pick. Just
yeah.
completely, the Survivor Devil was channeling her gut and said pick Seabass, probably because, again, he has that stony baloney deal with him.
Well, maybe that it was, she felt like it was like an all-in move where if she could have spent the day with Seabass, maybe she felt like she could have got him back on, you know, under her wing where it's like, hey, we did this. Look at us, Seabass. It's like old times.
Or that he was like athletically the best person to pick. Because I feel like maybe if Wendell was one of the, if he wasn't a captain, been, she would have picked him. And Kellen was the one who let the school fall of the two of them. So maybe she just felt like it was a good pick. I mean, she told me in her exit interview that she was so surprised in Sebastian voting against her. She felt like she had Seabass, like he was the remora to her shark. Mm-hmm. But I guess he's seeing other fish.
Yeah, seeing other fish. Not the only fish in the sea. Okay, let's get into talking about what the survivors are saying in the survivor community on social media as we kick off our social media segment for the final time. And here are the words of Chad Shepard.
Tweet, baby, tweet. Survivor tweet. Either scream my name now or your win is obsolete.
Jeff! Gotta call it. Need to call it.
I love Chad sort of like channeling the B-52s there. Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets.
Yes, okay. You gotta make sure you call it when you go through there. Okay, Mike, a lot of stuff from the world of survivors on social media. Donathan Hurley tweeted, at Donathan Hurley, people may pin me as one of the worst survivor players ever after tonight, but one thing they can't take away is, all caps, I'm a survivor finalist. LOL. I love this show and always will. Tune in next Wednesday to watch it all unfold on the Survivor CBS live finale / reunion show. Mike, unless Donathan is spoiling that he is in the Survivor Final Three, would you consider anybody that makes it to the final show a Survivor finalist?
I personally wouldn't. I consider a finalist someone who faces the jury. This sometimes happens. Like, I feel like this happens with, like, Dancing with the Stars, where they're like, it's our semifinals when it's four people down to three people. So the term is very loose, but the semantics that I'm breaking out here is that a finalist constitutes someone who makes it to, you know, answering jury questions, or I guess in this point, having the jury talk about them at this stage of the game. So I don't know. I don't want to poo-poo on Donathan's parade here, but he made the finale, might not necessarily be a Survivor finalist, unless, like you said, he is doing the Survivor Devil's work and spoiling his own placement.
Right. Then he should be on TMZ if he's doing that. But I believe what he is saying is, hey, look at me. I'm in the finale. I'm a finalist. But making it to the finale does not a Survivor finalist make. Although I'm fine with changing it because then I'm a Survivor finalist. And I've never once been referred to as a Survivor finalist in my life.
Well, then let's expand that logic, though, because, like, you could say that Stephanie Gonzalez made the final 20. Does that make her a Survivor finalist?
I guess so.
Melissa McNulty from Survivor Fiji is a finalist in Survivor.
Yeah.
But she didn't even get to play.
Here's one from James Lim. James Lim says, which Mike Bloom is betting against in terms of the finale, if there is a Survivor...
Wait, to be fair, you are too. Okay. So let's not throw this all onto me.
James says, if there's ever a Survivor USA versus Australia, the length of the game will surely be a factor. For us Americans, day 40 to 55 will literally be uncharted territory.
I mean, that is very true. I think that it was Steven who tweeted, like, day 34 on Survivor. This is when Jeff was talking about, like, you guys are mentally depleted. Around that time is the merge, or I guess the final merge, if you go with Jonathan LaPaglia's vernacular, in Australian Survivor. And there's so much more to go. But I also wonder if they did that, they would give them much more food. I know they cut back on the supplies immensely.
But why is James Lim speculating about this right now?
It's the secret, Rob. You put it
back
out into the universe, and it just might happen.
Yeah. Okay. Morgan Ricky, at Morgan Shea Ricky. Let me tell you.
Yes. The person that Rob doesn't think will get a question in the finale.
Okay. She tweeted out this week, I never settle, .. I'm too competitive, !! I want to win, all caps, !! Proud of those playing to win. All caps. Is this Laurel shade?
I mean, this sounds like shade towards, like, everyone that's left.
But specifically, go back to that Morgan. Who voted against Morgan?
I mean, Laurel and Donathan voted against Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela was just sort of there, so maybe she gets lumped in. I don't know. Should we read into this 4 exclamation points? Is that referring to 4 specific people?
No, I don't think so. Troy Zan, at Troy _Zan. You're not blocked by Troy Zan still, are you?
No, I became a member of the press after the Troyzan block party, so I benefited. And we also suggested ways to subtweet him last time, so I think we got through it.
Okay. He tweeted, "I think it's an unwritten rule. I'm looking through my 250-page contract!" Exclamation point. Ha! Was there an unwritten rule mentioned this week on Survivor, or is he referring to people that are breaking the Survivor contract?
Well, if we're turning to anyone for rules, it is Troyzan, Mr. Non-Transferable. Did you also see Troyzan tweeted something about how much he dislikes the royal wedding?
Yes, I saw that Sarah Lucina was in on that also.
I don't know, I guess these game changers are not happy about the name changers that comes to Meghan Markle becoming you know, heir to the throne.
Yes. Mike, have you been watching the royal wedding?
I mean, we're recording this on a Saturday morning. I'll admit I watched parts of it. I'm a big fan of fascinators. I'm fascinated by fascinators, as it were. And I thought it was a beautiful ceremony. I think Troyzan might have been a little angry because his Saturday morning cartoons were interrupted by royal wedding coverage. So they'll be back next week, Troy. Don't you worry.
Mike, I have a game for you to play this week. So we have a game recently. I had an idea. One day I was sitting at my computer and I was like, you know what website I should buy? Does anybody own RussellGotScrewed.com? I said, look, I thought this would be, I'm always thinking of, okay, strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah.
Zig when everybody is zagging. I bet this would be a great time to own RussellGotScrewed.com.
Yeah, you're really, as we all know, temperatures work where things can get so cold they get to a temperature where they burn you. So you really are, in a way, striking while the iron is hot.
Yes. So I went to go purchase RussellGotScrewed.com because, you know, you never know.
rainy days come around.
You never know.
You'd be stupid not to get it.
Unfortunately, this website, and don't go to it, Mike. This website apparently is already owned by somebody. This website is called RussellGotScrewed.com, a lifestyle blog. And so let me tell you, this is from the about page of RussellGotScrewed.com. My name is Russell Glenn. I'm 30 and I'm the creator of this website. The writer of most of these articles, and I love to write about improving something better. RussellGotScrewed.com.
Wait a minute. Oh, poor Russell. Poor Russell. You picked a horrible name for it, but now it makes me think.
Which one?
Did the Survivor Devil take this guy, this interior designer with a heart of gold, and turn him into the Survivor legend that we've been seeing and sent him back in time?
Okay. So, Mike, on RussellGotScrewed.com, the website, the popular website that I tried to buy, but I couldn't get. Somebody beat me to it. Okay, Russell Glenn, not Russell Joey Rodriguez. Okay, Russell Glenn owns RussellGotScrewed.com. I am going to give you three real articles that appear on RussellGotScrewed.com, and one fake article. And you need to tell me which is the fake story, which does not actually appear on RussellGotScrewed.com.
So just so I'm clarifying, you're asking me to correctly guess three articles on a lifestyle blog written by a man who has nothing to do with the game of Survivor. Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the bottom of the barrel, and I'm so excited to be here.
I mean, he knew enough to buy RussellGotScrewed.com.
I think it's some sort of like hardware thing, because like maybe he thought that's like a funny pun. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe he's capitalizing on it. Like, ooh, if people thought Russell got screwed, now they can check out some handy lifestyle tips while they seethe in their anger.
Okay. All right. These are three real articles from RussellGotScrewed.com and one fake one. Article number one, how to use a record player correctly.
Wait, are we sure? You said apparently before. Are we sure this is not Ken McNichol's alternate personality? Throw out that CD player and get a Victrola.
Apparently.
All right, number three. Given our current technology and with proper training, would it be possible to become Batman?
The title is so long, but it's so right that it could be a legitimate thing. And I want to know about, I want to read this article immediately because I want to see how this man tries to myth bust the idea of becoming Batman.
And number four, the best ideas of what to do in Minecraft when you are bored.
I'm glad he gave that contingency. Only do these things when you are at your D-list of activities. You've done the to-dos in your Minecraft. Let's figure out what you can do in the side now.
Okay. All right. Which three articles actually appear on RussellGotScrewed.com, the lifestyle blog? And which one is the fake one?
So just to review, the four that we have are how you can use a record player.
Correctly.
Not just don't use the incorrect way. Don't put the needle on your head or something. How to use it correctly. Right.
Basically, it's instructions for how to use a record player.
This feels like the most patronizing article ever, but I like it. How far, if a skunk sprayed you, how far could it spray you? This sounds like he's speaking from experience. I do wonder, I wonder if he, these are just random thoughts that have come to mind. These, like, his deep thoughts. Given the current technology, how could one become Batman? And then, oh boy, and then of course, what to do in Minecraft when you're bored.
Yes, the best ideas.
The best ideas to do in Minecraft when you're bored. I mean, the Batman one is so much freaking fun that I feel like it has to be real. It's stranger than fiction. Record player. See, these ones got, like, weirder, and then they took a step back. I'm trying to, like, look into your theory of placement, because that's what I always look into when I do my quizzes, is, like, I need to just to vary them up a little bit. Maybe
You do so well on all the B&B games.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I made an art out of going through Libby's Instagram and finding out what her April Fool's Day post is when she said, Merry Christmas, April Fools. that memorable post that she made. So we've got skunk, we've got record player correctly, we've got bored Minecraft. This guy feels like he would be a Minecraft guy, and it feels like, I don't want to get too far into Glenn's head here, because I know it's a dangerous, Russell Glenn, I'm sorry, I'm giving him the Jeff Probst treatment. I don't know if I'm giving him too much of a territory, if I'm getting too much into his psychology here, but I feel like he feels like he's doing us a favor by saying that the Minecraft, you know, like, hey, kids like Minecraft, they'll like these ideas, and maybe he wants to get clicks, he likes the listicles and all that, so I think that's real too. So that gives me down to skunk and record player. I feel like since it's a lifestyle blog, his lifestyle might have predicated a situation where he said, okay, I need to warn the people about getting sprayed by a skunk. This is a preventable cause. So I feel like we gotta go with the first one, which might have been ghostwritten by Ken McNichol, if my theory is true. I think that how to use a record player correctly is the false Russell Got Screwed article.
Okay. Final answer.
Absolutely.
No pumpkin, no.
No, sorry.
Ah!
How to use a record player correctly does appear on the lifestyle blog, RussellGotScrewed.com. Sorry
wow.
about that.
Wow, I'm going to have to read up on this. Okay, do I get a second guess, or do you want to reveal the answer to me? Do I get a ghost island chance?
Let me just really quick. To use the record player, set up the record player. It's heavy and can break. So put it in a secure location. Open the dust cover. It's the wooden top attached to hinges and rests on the built in the prop bar, so it can be
up. Is he thinking that he's writing to, like, someone who was just born today? Welcome to the world, child. Now, the first question you may have is, how do I use a record player? Yeah. Well, you've come to the right website, little baby.
Yes. He also adds, plug the turntable into a power source and turn it on. Different models have different on switches, so it can be on the front or center of the box or even near the volume knob.
I'd like to think that Russell asked himself these questions while he was setting up this record player, and so he thought, like, let me make an FAQ for record players.
I don't even know how to turn the record player on.
I set the records. I don't play them.
Okay. Mike, do you have a second guess?
All right. I'll go with my second guess was getting sprayed by a skunk.
Getting sprayed by a skunk.
No pumpkin, no.
No.
What?
How far can a skunk spray to get you sprayed is a real article. Have you ever wondered how far a skunk can spray? The interesting question will give you an interesting answer as well. Well, this small animal apparently has great control over its spray. It can reach up to 10 feet in distance. And then it goes into the nature of the skunk spray, all at RussellGotScrewed.com.
I think Russell promised a bit too much with an interesting answer there.
All right.
Bro, you're speaking to a different market, Russ.
Given our current technology and proper training, would it be possible to become Batman, or what are the best ideas to do in Minecraft when you are bored?
It's got to be Minecraft. I will be so disheartened if Batman was not a legitimate article on this site, Rob.
No pumpkin, no.
Oh, no!
Yes, the seven best ideas to do in Minecraft when you're bored are play Hunger Games, create a roller coaster, build a life-size replica, build the Minecraft kingdom, have a war, build a secret underwater glass for hideout, and number seven, build a volcano.
Wow. Those are seven things you could do while you're on Survivor and you're bored too, right?
The list is flawed. And then also, there's an article, the five best types of aquarium filters that you should know. That also appears on RussellGotScrewed.com.
I don't know. I'm going to need a step-by-step instruction as to what a filter is and how to put said filter on the aquarium, Mr. Glenn.
Yes. But given our current technology and with proper training, would it be possible to become Batman is not currently on RussellGotScrewed.com. You would have to go to Quora to find the answer to that question.
Oh, man. I guess I
podcast, September 10th.
Yeah, I overestimated. I mean, I would love to see Russell. I guess I had this image of Russell Hance being Batman, which might have like polluted my mind somewhat. I am the darkness in the night. Screw you, Scarecrow. I get into your dreams.
Okay. All right. Mike, and this is the season finale of the feedback show. We work very hard every single week to try to come up with ideas to talk about on the Survivor feedback show. Every week, try to come up with different games. I have a small team that works very closely with me all week long to try to come up with these ideas. We had, though, a lot of times this season, we came up with the idea for the name of the game, but we never came up with what the game was. What I'd like to do, Mike, is give you the name of some rejected feedback show games and have you come up with, off the top of your head, what the rules could be of said game.
Let's do some game storming. I'm all for it.
Game storming. If you don't mind, if you have a minute to talk about this with us.
Oh, yeah. All the time in the world.
Okay. These are all games that we came up with the concept for the name, but did not get to do this season on the podcast.
All right.
Okay. Game number one was something that was called Rourke, Paper, Scissors.
All right. I guess this is where, I mean, I guess you would choose Rourke, paper, or scissors, and then come up with a scenario where your object beat the other object, and then, like, the person, and then you had to sort of rule as to who had the better outcome, you know, like, who wrote the better story.
Okay. All right. The next one was called Tic Tac Snow.
That's where you list out three types of bread, and only one is a type of bread that Michael Snow produces on Bread by Snowy, and you have to guess which one is the correct one.
But that wouldn't be that good to play with Michael Snow, because he would know.
No, well, yeah, you don't play with him. You could have him fill in the information. Or you could do Tic-Tac Snow. You could have him... I don't know, because I'm trying to figure out what else. You could have him figure out if someone was on his season or not. Was it him or Francesca who forgot that the other was on their season when they went to know-it-alls?
Yeah. Maybe we could ask him, like, give him two people and he has to tell us who has better breath, that he would have to tell us if he was going to talk to them. So Tic-Tac Snow would be, who needs a Tic-Tac? Michael Snow.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And Wintergreen.
Yeah.
Okay. Banana flavored.
All right. One we had for the week that Nick from Australian Survivor was here. The game was called Hold Me Closer, Iadanza.
So you would have to provide him with two Survivor players, and he has to choose one that he would hold in a close embrace for a full minute.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago on the feedback show, Eliza Orleans was on, and we kicked around the idea for Eliza's $100,000 pyramid.
Okay, so this is where Eliza goes on a rant about a contestant but doesn't mention their name, and you have to guess who it is. Okay, he's this huge asshole, and he just thinks like he walks around like he owns the place.
Mm-hmm. And then it was a joke the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. This week, we had a couple of ideas. For the recap show, we kicked around an idea for That's So Kim.
This is where, I guess, you would... Kim would see into the future to see what So Kim would be doing in her second time out in an attempt to play like Kim Spratlin. Or he could say, you could give two quotes, one was So Kim and one is not, and Kim has to identify what is So Kim.
And then for this show, we talked about an idea that was a game called Laurel or Yanni or Solani.
Well, okay, this can be a quote from Laurel, a Yanni lyric, or a line said by a member of the Solani tribe from Survivor One World.
We may still try to play Laurel, Yanni, or Solani for the wiggle room. We'll see. All right. When Johnny Fairplay was on the recap show, we had an idea for a game called Turnabout is Fair Play.
So this is where Johnny Fairplay says something and you try to turn it back on him and see if he changes his mind.
And then lastly, back in week two, we had Simone Wynn on the feedback show and we had an idea for a game called Simone Money Mo Problems.
This is where you have Simone list a problem in her life or a problem she had on Survivor, and every time she does, you give her a dollar.
Wow. Oh, it's like win Akiva's money. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's not really a game. It's more so an opportunity to gripe. Speaking of Costanza's, that's a very festivist type of thing. But it could have paid out in the long run. Then she could have taken that money to Eliza's $100,000 pyramid.
And finally, Mike, one other question that we have. This is from the great Lyndall from Australia, who writes in to say, this week for the Survivor finale, I'll be getting drunk with my best friend during the show. I cannot recommend this approach highly enough to anyone who thinks they'll be salty about the finale. It worked like a treat for me last season. Do you have any recommendations for Survivor drinking games? Example given, drink every time X happens. Mike, do you have any ideas for Lyndall as she drinks during the Survivor finale? Drink every time what happens?
Well, okay, so let's go over a few things here. We don't want anyone to die from alcohol poisoning. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be too liberal or too Laurel with these.
Or Yanni.
Or Yanni. We don't want to be too Yanni, especially. Crank back the Uzo and it all. We also don't want to, you know, be too conservative with it. But I guess we got to find something that's recurring. Now, I know in the next time on, I did hear Wendell say, I've got to reverse the curse. So I guess if that's mentioned, I feel like that's got to be a drink. Here's a good one. If someone plays an idol, do a waterfall. So keep drinking from the time the person stands up and says something. And according now, you need to say something to Jeff in order to constitute it something true from now on. They stand up and say Jeff through Jeff saying, this is a real and hill and immunity idol. All votes against blank will not count. I feel like that's a good, like, standard waterfall drinking game to go with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a good one. I'm trying to think of anything else that is going to be recurring in the finale.
We could do Anytime Donathan subtitled. I feel like that's a good runner.
You could be dead.
Anytime Sebastian, like, this is very subjective, but anytime Sebastian has a blank reaction on his face, anytime we get resting Bass face, I feel like that's a good time to drink.
Right. Anytime Angela speaks, drink.
Yes, exactly. You might be stone cold sober by the end of it.
Well, we got to even it out.
All right, well, here's what you can do. Take two of your favorite drinks. Make sure it's not like beer and whiskey or something, but like two different alcohols. If you really want to get screwed up by the time the reunion happens, take these two cups of different liquors, put them in front of you. When Dominic gets a vote, shoot the drink in your left hand. When Wendell gets a vote, drink from the drink in your right hand as Jeff reads the votes.
Okay. And every time you see Josh Wiggler in the audience, also take a drink.
And every time, and finish your drink if he gets a name drop.
Yes. Yeah. Finish your drink if you see Mike Bloom in the audience.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be a bone dry. that cup will not be touched by the end of it.
Okay. Mike Bloom, what a long and wonderful trip it's been.
I like how you first start off with long. You're like, all right, got to think of another adjective. I'm glad you could have ended it with sir. That could have saved it. Yeah. We did cover a lot of ground. No, I think we got into some like meaty discussion in the beginning there, which was good. I liked breaking down, you know, a lot of the reception that's been going on. And, you know, I think as much consternation as people might have with the way some of this season shook out, I think it's going to be a very intriguing finale no matter what. So I'm always excited to come on and have fun and talk with you about this. And then once we packed into our entree, we finished up with some dessert and we got a very sweet and rather off the beaten path as per usual. So I have the most fun coming on to do this. So thank you so much for having me back. Yeah, and of course the Survivor Devil as well.
Good. And hopefully we'll get a chance to at least try one or two of those off-season podcasts over the summer.
We're doing them all. It's in my contract. Do you want to call my agent back?
Bloom is in. He's in. Trust me. Rob, call me back. Bloom is in, no matter what.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. Mike, what is the hashtag today?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I was thinking we have fan prophecy of the Fijian fan lady. We could do Russell got screwed, even though that might have been trending back in the day, or like something from like Russell Glenn, because that was a lot of fun to venture into tangential Survivor based websites.
Mm-hmm.
We could hashtag one of your, if you have one of those scrapped games that you want to, you know, bring to light once more, that can be it as well. There's a plethora of possibilities in front of us, unlike Laurel at this point.
What about Jacob Derwin's musical number at the finale?
Ooh, I like this. Let's see. Could be Jacob's number or something like that. So, all right, here's one. So I know we talked for a glimpse, and I know you didn't cue up the cereal music, but it's still a pretty big controversy as to whether or not Michael drank that beer that was shown in his hand at Ponderosa. And maybe that leads to the Eugene Rosen of it all. What if we go with hashtag Corona or no Rona?
Okay.
And people can sort of register their side as to whether or not they thought that Michael was merely holding or consuming.
Okay. And then that way we will know one way or the other where you stand on the controversy going into the finale.
Yeah, I was thinking or that or Ghost Monkey Island, but I feel like that's too far in the sea bass camp, maybe.
This is Ghost.
Okay. All right. Follow the great Mike Bloom on Twitter. He is at a Mike Bloom type. And then
don't forget the plugs. Don't forget the plugs.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. My gut is telling me that I need to put in the plugs here. So the RHAP B&B, we're coming back for one more post-finale podcast. We'll be getting together with the great Shannon Gates, who has been killing it on the Survivor New Zealand coverage. I would really encourage anyone out there, you know, especially after the season happens and you're going through Survivor withdrawals, the international editions of Survivor, New Zealand and especially South Africa, which I've watched the first two episodes a couple of weeks ago or a couple days ago, are pretty darn fantastic, especially South Africa. It's the first time I'm watching it. I've been really impressed by it. Actually, to give a bit of a teaser, Shannon and I will be getting together after the finale a couple weeks from now to talk a bit about Survivor South Africa up to this point. So I really recommend DM me if you want to slide puzzle into my DMs if you want me to send you some links there. Yeah, they might blow up like a big Ben bomb there. But we'll be back on the B&B next week to wrap things up with Liana Boris. Drag Race is happening as well with Brent and Liana. I'm always podcasting with AJ Mass on The Hamster Factor. And I'm also covering the finale of American Idol with my wife, Angela, here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. I'm doing SNL podcast with Mario Lanza. That's going to be coming to its finale soon as well. One thing that isn't coming to its finale is Westworld, which just had an incredible episode 4, that I get to talk about with Jay and Jack. I stream D&D every other week on Twitch with TPK Games called The Campaign, and Yeah, I think that's it. My agent might need to confirm, but I believe I've gone through all of the massive amounts of plugs in the giant electrical grid that is my podcasting life at this point.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And of course, Survivor Exit Press with Parade Magazine, and I'll be there on the red carpet doing some interviews, and I'll probably be doing some other TV stuff as well in the meantime before we get into the Big Brother 20 of it all.
Okay, so much going on there for Mike Bloom, but always a pleasure. We didn't even get to talk about what Chrissy thinks about this season.
I mean, did we need so many Ghost Island games or lack thereof?
No, she had a tweet that was on Reddit this week. She is not loving the season.
Yeah, so I think if you apply the Chrissy voice to it, I think that's all we really needed to do.
Yeah. Okay. Mike Bloom, always a pleasure. Looking forward to podcasting more with you this summer. A couple other things, of course. The Robin's Podcast Patreon. If all of this nonsense appeals to you, if you're somebody saying like, what, you guys are wrapping this up already? Then maybe becoming an RHAP patron might be something that is right for you. For more information, go to robhasawebsite.com/patreon. I also just wanted to send some positive thoughts out to someone who is one of my favorite survivors, if not my favorite person that ever played the game, and that would be the great Rudy Bosch, who there's some reports out there that he's going through a very bad health scare right now, and you know, who knows, he is a very advanced age, and so nobody knows how this is going to turn out, but just want to send some positive thoughts to the great Rudy Bosch, and hopefully he's gonna end up being a-okay after all this. Okay, so Mike Bloom, thank you so much. We'll be back with the finale of the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
I didn't know that the devil was a singer. Who only likes a little of the spotlight. I didn't know that the devil was a singer. Worries about how she's perceived. I didn't know that the devil was a singer. I guess I want the devil around.